from northwestern Minnesota, way northwest, next to Dakota, North Dakota, and Canada, basically, and I live in the city of Crookston.
Hi, I'm Kathy Tinglestead. I represent about half of Coon Rapids and a little bit of Andover.
Good evening. I'm Terry Mara. I live in St. Peter. I represent Niquet County and the western part of Sibley County.
And I'm Senator Sandy Rummel, and I represent Senate District 53, which includes Lino Lakes, Circle Pines, and Lexington.
I'm Melissa Hortman. I'm a state representative for Northern Brooklyn Park and the southern part of Coon Rapids.
Hi, good evening. I'm Frank Hornstein, District 60B. I represent Southwest Minneapolis, and I also chair a subcommittee of this committee on transportation policy and transit.
And I'm Jim Abler. Welcome to my hometown, all of the committee members here. This is one of the finest towns and one of the best counties and one of the best states in the world. It's nice you can come to the county where not one penny of the governor's bonding proposal would be spent, and so maybe we can do some other things to help the roads get here. Did you come at the rush hour time on Highway 10? I hope this can kind of get a better flavor. But it's very good you're here, and I want to just thank you for coming.
We do have several committee staff members. Susan Maher is our legislative assistant, and Abby Mahon's committee, our committee administrator, and Dan Kane is our staff research person, I believe. We have a fair number of testifiers. I think we've got on the paper here about 15 or 18. So we do like to finish within a relative reasonable time, and we don't want to cut anyone off. But if it gets to the point where it gets extended, sometimes the later ones can, if there's repetition, you can kind of shorten it up a bit. We'd appreciate it if there is that type of repetition. And the first one on our testifier is Commissioner Dennis Berg, the chair of the Anoka County Board. Welcome, Commissioner Berg.
Thank you, Chairman Leader. And I'm Dennis Berg, I'm chair of Anoka County Board, and I really want to welcome each and every one of you here tonight. We know you care about this issue, you wouldn't be here, and I feel like in some cases we're actually singing to the choir, but I think it's important that you hear what we have to say, what our needs are, and hopefully you'll be able to take back a little ammunition as you try and get a transportation bill passed this coming year. We have a number of speakers before coming up, so I'm going to try and limit my remarks to the items that probably won't be covered. But one of the things that's concerning for us in Anoka County is the budget impact transportation has on our property tax levy. This current year, we levied over $20 million, $20,870,000 to be exact, for transportation and transit projects. That is over 17% of our levy. A lot of people have asked me how you can politically support the wheelage tax. Well, for me, it's not a choice of the wheelage tax or no tax. It's choice as the wheelage tax or property tax. And every road project that we're doing, where we're actually rebuilding the road, we're leveraging that money with outside money. The majority of it's federal. Some of our projects are state. Some is a combination of federal, state. We just completed a project that was federal, state, county, city, and a private developer. So we're doing a good job of leveraging what we have, so we feel justified in the property tax levy. But we would really like to find a way to move that around. A couple of the things that I'd like to touch on, because I don't think you'll probably hear about it tonight, but that we've seen surfaces, transportation has started to slow down in the state. Normally when we let bids, we've got the mega projects, the big bridges, the $1 million plus, the $2-3 million projects on up. And then we have a lot of smaller projects, the $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 projects. It tends to be one type of contractor that will bid on the smaller projects, do a very good job. That's what their specialty is. They don't have the equipment and the wherewithal to bid on the mega projects. But the small contractors are the ones we're worried about. Now, we're still doing the small projects. You know, they're usually more on an emergency basis, and there's a lot of them. A lot of $200,000-$400,000 projects within our budget. But what we've seen happen is, as the big projects slow down, the contractors that were normally bidding on them, they're struggling just to stay alive until this economy turns around for road construction. So they're bidding on these small jobs. And it's great news for us today. We just opened a bid today and had a fantastic price. It's a small project. It's a parking lot and it's moving and access. But it's the big contractors that are driving the price down, because to them it's just a matter of minimizing their losses. But it's putting the small people out of business. And I'm really careful 2-3 years from now as we start gearing up, you know, all these small jobs, instead of being 300,000, are going to be 500,000 because the people that were there are gone. So I'm fearful for them, and they're not the ones that are going to be here. Most of them don't know how to react to it. Some are going to go into other, you know, businesses, but it's a concern. Another concern that we have that stays below the limelight is, as you know, in the metro area, we have this marvelous legislative piece of action that goes back a number of years now called RAL funding, where once we have a road project that's been mapped, we know what the road's going to be, we know what the right-of-way that we need is, and it might be 5 years before we build the road, it might be 3 years. But now we can go to this RAL funding through the Met Council, access dollars in a revolving loan account that are there. So when one of the property owners comes to us and says, you know, I want to sell my property, I want to move on, and I'm going to do this or do that, or sometimes they've gone to the city and they're going to do a redevelopment, found out that in a few years the road's going to be coming through their property. So we can access this RAL funds, and when we've got a willing seller, buy the property. It's a great tool. Saves a lot of condemnation, saves a lot of heartache. It's a good relationship with government. And then when we build a project, we repay the money back into the RAL fund and somebody else borrows it. But what's happened now is these projects aren't moving, so the money is not coming back in. We have a lot of opportunity today to buy right-of-way that we know we're going to need, but we can't buy it because the money's tied up in right-of-way for a project that should have been under construction. You know, it's something we don't think about, but it really, long-term, is going to have an effect. I could spend some time talking about transportation or transit funding. The people that aren't going to be here tonight are those that are transit dependent, but as we keep cutting back on operation, cutting back on bus service, they really suffer. They no longer can have that quality of life where they can move around, do their shopping, go to medical appointments at a time that's convenient for them. More and more, they've got to schedule it on the day and the hour that the bus is available. And we probably won't hear from them tonight. In Anoka County, we're kind of unique in that we partner with Sherman County and Hennepin County, and we have the North Star Commuter Coach Bus. We're very proud of it. It's very successful. If we were to say tomorrow we're no longer going to operate the bus, it'd be a firestorm out there because a lot of people depend on it, and we'd all be getting calls. So the quality of it is not in dispute. But it's the only transportation transit bus in the metro area where the operating cost is paid for with property tax, part of our levy. And I think we really need to address that problem of operations, and the bill that you all passed that we were really hoping would become law would have taken care of that problem for us. So we'd really like to see that get revived. You're going to hear a lot of needs and unmet needs tonight. And I know there was a time when I started looking at just in the county what it would take. And all of a sudden it got so overwhelming. It was like, just throw your hands up and say, we can't solve it. Congestion's here to stay. Safety is a thing of the past. Maintaining infrastructure is a thing of the past. But if you look back in the history of this state, even though we've got a challenge today, it's not as bad as it was in the early 50s and mid-50s. It took longer to drive from Soderville down Central Avenue to Lake Street in 1956 than it does today with the congestion. The problem was a little different back then because we had all the signalized intersections but no left-turn lanes, so when a car in front of you to make a left turn, you sat there. So you could spend an hour and a half on that stretch of road, and today in the morning, I guess you probably can again, so we're getting back there. But we figured out a way to solve the problem, and we solved it back then. Rural Minnesota was mired down in mud. They couldn't get their crops to market. In spring, they couldn't move because of all the muddy roads. And the legislature at that time showed a lot of political courage and a lot of creativity to solve the problem. They set a goal to solve the problem in 20 years, starting in 1958. Get rural Minnesota out of the mud, get the metro area out of congestion. They put together a highway transportation funding program and a number of things, including the county state aid system, the MSA system, the Highway User Trust Fund, the highway distribution funding formulas for state and county and city. And for all that to be in place yet today, 50 years later, really speaks well to how the vision they had. Now, they didn't quite solve the congestion problem within that 20-year time frame, but they had problems that were bigger than the problems we have today. And some of the problems we don't even think about today. One of them was they didn't know if they even had the engineering technology and expertise to solve the problem. There were no interstate systems yet. We had this new idea that was being talked about where you could merge traffic at 65 miles an hour at right angles and not kill everybody, and there were a lot of naysayers saying that'll never happen. Today is what we know as the cloverleaf on the interstates, but they discovered that it could be done. They didn't know if they had the technology to build the bridges that would be needed to accomplish some of these intersections. They didn't know if they had the contractors out there that could gear up fast enough. And they had no idea what the cost was going to be. But today we don't have any of these problems. But they were up to the challenge, and they solved that problem. And I think if we look back into our history, we can solve that problem again today. You know, our big problem today is funding. And when they looked at the funding back then, they had two criteria. They wanted to solve this problem without bonding, without borrowing. They wanted to pay as they went. Interstate system was paid for as it was built. Just think about it. That's pretty fantastic. Today we struggle for 2 miles. But they wanted it to be a user-pay system where the people that used it the most paid more than those that didn't. And an ability to pay, those that could afford it would pay more than those that couldn't. And it was pretty creative because the license tabs on the vehicle was tied to the value of the vehicle. So the more expensive an automobile you could afford, the more you paid. And as the price of cars went up, you had that automatic index for inflation. So as the road cost constructions rose, your license tab fees went up so you would keep up with it so that you weren't trying to buy what we're doing today, buying 2007 roads for $1988. You know, we stayed with it up until a few years ago when we knocked the top end off. But on the gas tax, that's the interesting debate. They didn't know what it was going to cost. They didn't know how much they needed. They were all gun-shy because they had just missed the mark totally on the education system. All the baby boomers had just hit the classrooms, and they were scrambling to pay for schools. And they didn't want to make that big a miscalculation. So they felt, unlike today when we don't set a fixed tax because we don't want to create something that might get out of hand, they didn't want to lock the gas tax in at a percentage of the price of gas because they may have to raise it, they may have to lower it. The industry may not grow with them, or the ability to do what they want to do may prove not to be possible. So they made the decision that every 2 years they would revisit the gas tax. And if you track legislation from 1958 to 1988, they pretty well did that. Some years they didn't raise it, but then you only met every other year. But the goal in 1958 that they talked about was 20% of the price of gas before tax. That's what they put it at. And every time they revisited it, 20% of the price of gas before tax is what it went to. They would have been right on had they indexed it to inflation at 20% of the price of gas. Just think if we'd have stayed there. Since 1988, we've not changed it, and that's why we're all here tonight. We've got a problem. But if we'd have stayed with it, we wouldn't have this big catch-up. We wouldn't have this big deficit in maintenance infrastructure. We wouldn't have the safety concerns to the extent that we have them today. And frankly, I don't think we'd still be building 9-ton roads, which is a standard that came out in 1958 before 18-wheelers were in private ownership. We're still building roads to a standard that does not accommodate semis. And for us to think about, let's start building 12-ton. We can't even afford the 9-tons. You know, we're falling behind. So we have a lot of catch-up to do. But the point I want to make is, it's a problem that can be managed. And, if they could do it in 58, we can do it in 2008. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Berg. Commissioner? I'm sure there may be questions. Are there questions from any members? If not, you covered it pretty well. I just appreciate the fact that you recognize the Roll Fund, because that's an issue that's funded every year, and we assume it's working well, and I think it's working real well, and it does the job it should be designed to do, and that's great.
It's working extremely well, and yes, there is more money added each year. Inflation, the price of real estate goes up, so that's been a good addition, so it's kept up with it. But what's really happened is the payback is falling behind because the projects, instead of being built 3 years out, are now 7 and 8 years out and still not built. But that's really where the pinch is coming from. It's a great piece of legislation. I don't want to say anything to discredit it because it's done a fantastic job and will continue to. And if we jumpstart that road building economy, it'll heal itself.
Yeah. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Berg. I wanted to just ask a question. At the very beginning, you talked about the property tax levy.
Yes.
And the transportation piece being 17% of the levy. I can't remember if you gave a total amount for your property tax levy or if you gave a total amount for the transportation spending.
I didn't. I was smart enough to look this up just before we started the meeting, so I just give myself a pat on the back. It's the only note I really have. Our total levy before the regional rail levy for the county, what we actually go to our taxpayers for, our budget's larger because we have a lot of pass-through money and leverage a lot of money with federal, that type of thing. But the total levy for the county is $117,671,000. The regional rail levy and other smaller levies is another $4,300,000 for a grand total of $121,971,698. 17% of that, or $20,870,000, goes to transportation and transit.
And then just a follow-up, Mr. Chair. The bill that we passed that was vetoed would have provided $57.4 million to Anoka County from fiscal year 2008 to 2017. And the new money, just the new money, not the total money in 2008, would have been $1.8 million. And I just wanted to bring up that fact because I'm trying to communicate that transportation funding at the state level through the gas tax also could provide property tax relief and lessen the pressure on the property taxes.
Absolutely. You know, with the gas tax, the counties share 29% of it, so that's where our share comes from, and that would solve a lot of our problems. The state gets 62%, and if the state had the money to maintain highways, for capacity, highways like 65, highways like 47, we wouldn't have to be gearing up to the extent we are on our reliever roads, our Radisson roads, our Hansons, our Bunker Lake Boulevard, just Highway 10 is congested. So we really can't quantify what that dollar amount is, but it's huge. If the state, was to be able to, meet their demand, take the stop signs off Highway 10, most of you drove that tonight, you know what I'm talking about. But a lot of the traffic that should be on 10 is not there. It's over in our county system. It's really got a fast multiplying factor, and that's why I say the problem's manageable, because once everything kicks in and it starts moving the other way, it'll move the other way just as quick as we got into this.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Picking up on Representative Portman's point, I want to thank you, Mr. Berg, Commissioner, for your leadership on transportation issues. And unfortunately, we're going to get you some company as the you talked about being the only bus in the metro area funded solely by property taxes. I know that my neighbor, Paul Gardner, representative, who's not here now, would speak up that his city of Shoreview has implemented a bus service twice a day coming south and then back up from St. Paul, I think. Entirely in response to the bridge, and I believe that they're picking that up by the property tax levy. And then the Rush Line bus corridor, we're trying to follow the great example that you guys have set with the North Star corridor here by getting buses started. All $805,199 of the accelerated startup for our counties up 35E and 35W are on the backs of property taxes. So unfortunately, you've provided great leadership, but in this case, we'd rather to end the precedent and have the state actually be able to help out. But just want to point out that we'll be talking probably about some ways that we can learn from the lessons that you've picked up here.
And while we're not unwilling to provide the service because our residents are demanding and deserving of it, but it's really not even fair on the property tax system, because if you inventory who's on the bus, and we do, Anoka County property taxpayers are paying for it, but Wright County and Stearns County and other counties are riding the bus and taking advantage of it. So we really need a tax that's not so boundary specific, just in the interest of fairness. And when the North Star starts operating, we're going to have property tax there too, unless the legislation that was passed would have resolved that problem for us. And Representative Hortman brought up a good point when she looked at the percentage of our property tax that goes to transportation. The highway user trust fund, the money the county gets from the gas tax and the license tabs, it gets divided out between the cities, the state, and the county. That if you round it off, we get about $8 million a year from the Highway Trust Fund. And then we leverage that with another $17 million of property tax. We turn around and add these two together, and we leverage it for a ton of federal money and other funding sources. A lot of it is private developers. The private developers have really stepped up to the plate. We've had a lot of money spent on our roads because they need safe access to their customers. What's a little bit disheartening for me is I sit on the Transportation Advisory Board. We see the opportunities to leverage federal dollars. But all of a sudden, the flags are going up. Be careful what you ask for, because you might get it. I can't go down to the and come up with projects that total $30 million and ask for $15 million of federal dollars. We need the projects. We'll get the $15 million, but we don't have the $15 to match. We don't dare ask for it. We're leaving a lot of opportunity on the table by putting ourselves in such a financial bind. And the reality of it is, instead of $17 million tax, $8 million trust fund dollars from gas tax and license tax, it should be the other way around. I think, we need to expect a local share, but the local share shouldn't be the big piece of the pie.
Thank you, Commissioner, for your testimony.
Thank you.
We have several other legislators that are here, and Senator, would you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Senator Jim Carlson. I'm from the Burnsville and Eagan area. I represent most of Eagan and a little bit of Burnsville, and I am the Vice Chair of the Senate Transportation Committee.
Thank you. We also have a representative who we invite up, represent Dietrich. At least you should stand up if you don't want to come up here so they know who you are. Would you identify yourself? I think they could hear you, just to say where you're from. And we have another member. Senator, would you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, Chair and Leader. I'm Senator Vandeveer. I'm from Forest Lake, and I served 5 terms in the House and on my first term in the Senate. So nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Our next testifier is Doug Fisher, the county engineer. I believe it's Anoka County Engineer, Doug, right?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, I'm Doug Fisher. I'm the county engineer tonight. My charge is to talk a little bit about our highway and bridge infrastructure needs. I'm going to address about our transit service and infrastructure and talk about essentially bus transit. You'll be hearing other speakers talk about the North Star Commuter Rail, so I won't be talking about that in my presentation. And then as a good engineer always does, I'm going to address what our needs are, and I'm going to come up with some funding and policy solutions, as good engineers always like to offer solutions. A little bit of background on our highway system. Trunk highway system in Anoka County, we have 100 miles. You'll notice that there's no east-west routes on this map. Actually, this piece is no longer a trunk highway. It's a county road, so the next east-west trunk highway is approximately 25 miles north in Isani County. So we have a scarcity of trunk highways in Anoka County. We do have, to fill that in, 423 miles of county roads and county state aid highways in that system. And then our city and township system adds approximately 1,500 miles of additional roads. Again, tonight I'm going to talk about our capacity, our standards, some safety issues that we have, and our bridge issues, which are coming to light. One of the biggest impacts we have in Anoka County is our growth, and that impact leads to one of our biggest problems, and that's congestion. And that's why highways and transit is so vital in Anoka County. When you look at our population trends in Anoka County, over the past decade, we've been growing at about 50,000 persons per decade, and that trend is planning on continuing. When you look at what generates traffic, it's where people live and where people work, and that's the key. And we see, even around Anoka County, people living in collar counties outside of Anoka County working in the core cities. So we see a lot of that traffic going through here, but we'll see some of that impact. Looking at development and growth, what that can do to a highway, here's just a small piece of Anoka County. This is the northeast corner of Blaine. We had the Big Lakes development, which added 3,300 housing units there. In the drawing boards right now, another 2,400 units on Lexington Avenue. North of Main Street, another 4,600 units. We have Lakes Park 17, or whatever that is, another 290 units. In addition, in this area, so we have 11,000 new housing units coming on board just in this northeast corner of Blaine. And the rule of thumb is that each household generates 10 trips per day. So 11,000 housing units, we're talking over 100,000 vehicle trips per day. In addition, this area is home of the USA Soccer Club, the 3M Championship. So this is a busy airport. You can see our region, our airports there. And when you look at what's happening to our highways there, Main Street, our east-west route through there, right now is about 7,400, projected 20,000. Lexington Avenue, 10,000, projected 40. You can see, again, another county road, Radisson Road, the growth there. Looking at the trunk highway system, trunk highway 65, over 75,000 trips projected in 2030. I-35W, 98,000. So you can see what this growth is doing to Anoka County. And that's just one part of Blaine. This map shows a 2030 level of service projection over the whole county. And what you can see here, everything in red is a level of service F, which means standing traffic. It's stalled traffic. And you can see on this map Highway 10 along here, Highway 65 running up the middle, 35W and 35E, 694 down here, 610 going across here. And the thicker the line is, that's more traffic that's stuck in traffic. And then you can see all our county roads that are trying to feed into that system, they're clogged too. This is a sad state of affairs. Here's the solution, and the colors here represent how many lanes you need to add to get this to, you know, a level of service C or D during a congested hour. So Highway 10, we need to add between 6 and 8 lanes of traffic on Highway 10. The blue you can see is 2 to 4, a lot of orange here, which means, hey, we just need to add one lane in each direction, we might be all right. But you can see the tremendous needs that this growth is causing here in Anoka County. So we're very hopeful that most of these congestion problems are on a trunk highway system. So we look into the MnDOT's 20-year transportation system plan to see how are they going to address that. Let me click on the expansion projects programmed right now in MnDOT's 20-year plan. There it is. Nothing. No expansion projects planned in 20 years in Anoka County on the trunk highway system. Now there's maintenance projects and there's intersection projects and there's little projects, but there are no identified expansion projects in MnDOT's 20-year plan, and we find that irresponsible. When the trunk highway system breaks down, where do people go? They go on the county highway system. So now we have problems on our system. Looking at our system, you can see this is a little harder to read, some of the colored routes here where we are having backups. And you can see these are the north-south routes that are trying to feed Highway 10, trying to get on 610 in the morning, feeding 35W. Right now, today, we have 22 miles of these capacity deficiencies at an $80 million price tag. When we look at 2030, which I've been speaking mostly about, we end up with 122 miles of capacity deficiencies and a $256 million price tag. So it's only getting worse. But Anoka County and the Anoka County Board, you know, is trying to be very proactive. When you look at our 5-year transportation improvement plan for highways, we have identified $340 million of program expense. That's right away design, engineering, and construction. And $170 million of that is construction. So we've been very aggressive at going after federal funds, maximizing our state aid. We're advanced borrowing every year on our state aid. But as Commissioner Berg told you, we are relying on property tax to a larger and larger extent every single year to address these needs. Not only are we trying to address our needs, we're also trying to address the trunk highway needs, because we know that it's important that the trunk highway system function. And if we can help that system function, it's only going to help our system. We've been involved in 4 major interchange projects with MnDOT right now, including the Highway 65 Main Street interchange. This is a $48 million project. And here's what it looks like now. It's an at-grade intersection with a signal. Here's what it's going to look like. It's going to be one of these single-point diamond interchange, grade separate interchange. This is a $48 million project. We're using $12.5 million of the governor's BAP, the Bond Accelerated Project Funds. But the rest of the money is from federal, county, or turnback money. The county had to take back 5 miles of Trunk Highway 242 to release $12.5 million of Trunk Highway turnback funds to use towards this project. So we got strapped with another 5 miles of deficient Trunk Highway now in the county system. We just completed the Hanson Boulevard Highway 10 interchange. This was a $23 million project. MnDOT did commit $6.5 million towards this project, but it's payable in 2012 and 13. So we had to advance fund $6.5 million of the state money to get this project completed. Right now, we're also under construction the Lake Drive I-35W interchange up by the Lionel Lake City Hall. This is a $10 million project, and MnDOT's contribution to this project was they provided construction, inspection, and administration, so about $600,000 of the $10 million project costs were provided by the state. Right now, we're also working with the state on a new interchange at Main Street and I-35E in Lionel Lakes, and this is a $16 million project, and there's no state money identified for this project. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, we're spending, we recognize these needs, and a lot of these bridges, like the Hanson Highway 10, that bridge was the bottleneck on Highway 10. Highway 10 couldn't be expanded because the old bridge, the pier spacings, prevented it from being expanded. We rebuilt it. Now we're trying to push for expansion on Highway 10, and we are working with MnDOT, and we're talking in discussions right now about doing that. But again, Anoka County is going to have to come up with some monies in the short term to get that project underway as well. Let me switch over. That was our capacity problems. Didn't even talk about our roads that don't meet current standards. These are roads with no shoulders, bad curves, bad sight distances. You can see in the rural part of the county, the northern two-thirds of the county, this is where we have 190 miles of geometric deficiencies. Repair cost, $229 million. When we look at crashes, our safety, you can see each dot represents an intersection or an area where we had 10 or more crashes. The triangles represent fatalities. And you can see in our urban area where we have a lot of congestion, we have a lot of rear-end personal injury, property damage crashes. In our rural area, this is where fatalities are occurring. I think you hear that at the legislature that, you know, it's the rural two-lane roads that are the most hazardous. When you look at Anoka County, we're kind of a snapshot of the whole state. We have an urban area, we have a rural area, and those trends are very apparent here in Anoka County. The Department of Public Safety just published their 2006 Crash Facts book. It's a nice black book. Here are the disturbing statistics in Anoka County. 29 fatalities, 29 deaths in Anoka County in 2006. And they correlate a cost to deaths, injuries, and property damage. 2,000 people were injured in these crashes and 2,500 crashes at a cost of almost $85 million. And loss, you know, wages, health care, and 29 deaths. I mean, that's, you know, more than, you know, the equivalent of two I-35W bridges falling down. I don't want to over-sensationalize that fact, but that's the fact. And what's even more disturbing here in Anoka County is one of the groups that's overrepresented in fatalities and in highway fatalities is our youth. You know, we look at the state averages for how many are caused by the road, how many are caused by juvenile drivers and stuff. And in Anoka County, we're overrepresented in the number of young drivers that are dying on our highways. And that is one of the most disturbing facts that we have. In 2006, Anoka County was second only to Hennepin County in the number of fatalities. Hennepin County had the most at 40, but Hennepin County had almost six times as many crashes as we did in Anoka County. So not only are we having, you know, crashes, but our crashes are very severe crashes. Our severity ratings are very, very high. This is a very disturbing. As me, county engineer, I see these crash reports come on my desk, and I got to look at these things. It's one of the most sickening parts of my job that I have to deal with this. But this is the information. This is the facts. Bridge deficiencies is all the kind of rage right now. Anoka County, I will say, this is one area we are very strong at. We have 55 bridges in Anoka County. Five of our bridges are rated as structurally deficient. One of those bridges is currently under construction, and there's one township bridge that is also rated structurally deficient. We are in very good shape with our bridges, but we do support increase in bridge bonding, you know, because these are bridges that are, you know, needing repair. And plus, although our bridges are in very good shape, a lot of them were built in that period in the 70s and 80s, and they'll be coming up. So every year we see more and more dipping lower and lower. So even though we're in good shape now, and there's a big glut of bridges that are already structurally deficient in front of ours, you know, we need to essentially push those out of the way so we can get ours in line here in the future. All right, let me switch over to transit. I could go on all night on highway stuff, but trust me. Let me talk about transit. You can see Anoka County is kind of the top part of the map here. You can see our urban area is serviced by Metro Transit. In addition to that, we do have our Anoka County Traveler, which operates kind of an east-west fixed route through the urban area. And it also operates a dial-a-ride with limited service throughout the entire county. I think Commissioner Berg talked about, you can see our transit ridership as a total is up, and our fixed rides are up. So the routes that are fixed and dependable, people can count on, people are using, and they're wanting to use them more and more and more. What you're seeing a decline in is our dial-a-ride. Now, they get a two-hour window when they can be picked up and when they're going to be dropped off. So that's where we're seeing a decline. And one of the reasons we're having that decline is Met Council uses a performance-based funding package. So they go back 2 years and say, what's your ridership? And then they base your funding on their ridership. Well, the first year they cut funding, well, of course, our service hours went down, so our ridership went down. So ridership goes down. Next time they do the evaluation, the funding goes down. So then we reduce ridership. So it's just this, you know, if you can envision a swirling toilet is what I like to say in good engineering terms. I mean, that's what's happening with our dollar ride program. So that's something that we would like to see addressed. And you can see here again, you know, Anoka County, you know, the property tax is trying to bolster this, trying to fill in the gaps as we get less and less funding. So that's another hit that Commissioner Berg talked about. We're spending property tax dollars on that system. One of our big transit successes is the North Star commuter coach, not the rail. The commuter coach is a bus that runs from Elk River, a stop in Coon Rapids, and it goes downtown Minneapolis. From day one, it's and every year, every month, and every year, it's been going up and up and up. You can see a little spike here. That's when the transit strike was on. So we saw a huge, I mean, we had standing room only. People were packed in these buses. So, you know, again, this is something that has been very good. And I think Commissioner Berg talked about this is a bus route that is fully subsidized by property taxes. I was going to say the only one that we know of in the state, but I can't say that, and I'll cross that off my notes for future presentations. We have a 20-year transit system plan. It's one of the first that a county ever prepared in the metro area. We're very proud of that. It addresses service. It addresses infrastructure. You know, besides North Star Commuter Rail, which, again, you're going to hear more about, which is a key component of that, we have other bus transit options, and we have a very active TMO, or Transportation Management Organization, where we're encouraging carpooling, riding your bike, walking, different activities for that. When you look at some infrastructure that we see needed, we see park and ride lots. We have identified $11.5 million of park and ride lot construction. Again, you're going to see a lot of these improvements in the underserved part of the county. Bus shoulder lanes on 35W, 35E, Highway 65. We have identified about $4 million of beefing up bus shoulder lanes. bus capital for new service in areas that don't have service, $3.5 million of bus capital and $2 million annually in operating costs. We have these needs. They need to be funded. They need to be addressed. I talked about funding. I think we're all way too familiar with the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund. And, again, I'm not going to go by any means go into this. And, again, the key components are the gas tax, tab fees, and the motor vehicle sales tax. When you look at the gas tax component of this, each 1 cent of the gas tax to Anoka County brings in about $200,000. So that's what 1 penny does. $200,000 doesn't pay for the cost of a traffic signal, by the way. Those are about $250,000. It pays for about one tandem axle snowplow truck, which is about $200,000. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. I can overlay maybe a mile and a half of highway with $200,000. So for every penny, I can do another mile or two of overlay. You know, we see that highway user tax and the CASA formula, you know, as user fees. I mentioned the gas tax, tab fees, motor vehicle sales tax. And again, as Commissioner Berg said, we get about $8.2 million of state aid through that formula. And Commissioner Berg talked about the $20 million in Anoka County we're levying for transportation. The highway road and bridge levy component of that is almost $16 million. So you can see we're levying almost double what the CASA formula is bringing in. And again, what we feel that is it's a huge shift from the road users to the property taxpayers. And in Anoka County, again, with the drive-through traffic from Sherburne County, Isani County, Chisago County, you know, we're making the Anoka County property taxpayer pay for transportation improvements that are being used by non-Anoka County residents. Again, additional funding opportunities. I'm not going to go through this. You saw a lot of these things. I will say about the wheelage tax. We implemented the wheelage tax, $5 wheelage tax, as the maximum allowable by law. And I can count on one hand how many phone calls we received complaining about implementing the wheelage tax in Anoka County. It was the biggest non-issue. We set up a phone line dedicated to respond to wheelage tax issues. And I can count on one hand how many phone calls we got. So it was the biggest non-issue. People, when they found out it was going 100% to transportation, there was no issue with it. Talking about, you know, the bill that both houses passed, that the governor vetoed, again, I think Representative Hortman did a very nice job, and my numbers are kind of in the right place. 2008, we would have received an additional $1.9 million. When it was fully phased in, an additional $8.9 million. And again, when you add that up over the life of the 10 years, to put it in perspective, the $58 million or $60 million, roughly $60 million we would have gotten in these new funds, I could have overlaid every single mile of county road, all 423 miles of it, with that money. I mean, that's the impact that bill would have had. We could have resurfaced our entire program. Right now, we need to do about $8 million of resurfacing. We're doing about $1.5 million a year. So that would have been a huge plug to fill that in to make our roads smoother and safer. Again, there's some other issues that we feel that the legislature can do that don't even cost any money. Now, there's a couple things in here that I do want to be a little critical of the legislature on. The eminent domain bill, we were adamantly opposed to. You know, I don't know if there's a problem on Rock 52 or Wally McCarthy's with the city, but I can assure you, Anoka County buys right away through the Federal Uniform Relocation and Acquisition Act, and we don't have a problem. And we feel that the new legislation is going to cost money and not give the property owner any significant benefit when it comes to doing highway projects. So we're opposed to that. I'd like to see it fixed, but that's another debate. Load restrictions. We're talking, the state's talking about putting heavier, bigger trucks on our highway system. The Federal Highway Administration does not allow these trucks on the interstate system or the U.S. highway system. Why would we want to put them on the state highway system or on the county highway system? You know, that's a big issue. Wetlands. Again, You probably saw me. I was the county's bulldog down there representing the County Engineers Association to talk about the wetland legislation. Unfortunately, I feel you made a bill that's going to cost us money, delay projects, and I can go on and on about that, but we'll save that for another debate. But those are things that, you know, we hope you engage us in, that you listen to us as these things come up, and let us. And we know it's unpopular to not support wetlands. We all support wetlands, but we want you to understand some of the ramifications of that. So I'll just end it with that. I think I said enough, maybe too much, but I would be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fisher, I'd like to turn for a moment to your testimony regarding fatalities on the county roads. I live in a rural district as well where fatalities on county roads, again, by young drivers is a particular concern. Well, what some folks will say to me is, but no amount of money is going to eliminate fatalities. If you had more money, what could you do to the roads that might reduce fatalities on those roads?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, Senator Morrow, sorry, apologize. There's a lot of things. You know, people are going to, there's going to be icy roads. There's going to be conditions where people slide off the road. But right now, some of our deficiencies are there's no shoulders. So when they drift over that edge line, their car gets sucked into the ditch. We don't have adequate right-of-way, deficient right-of-way. They hit a tree that shouldn't be there. You know, so a simple run off the road, you know, call a tow truck, get yelled at by dad, is turning into, you know, a run off the road, hit a tree, you know, we're having a funeral. And, you know, those are the things that we can do. You know, so those are bringing roads up to standards. You know, people, stupid things are going to happen, crazy things are happening, but people shouldn't die for making a mistake. You know, and that's what's happening on our rural two-lane roads. You know, we're trying to address this as best we can. You know, there's lighting, there's edge rumble strips, centerline rumble strips. You know, in the engineering community, we talk about this. We have the Towards Zero Depth. There's a lot of new engineering initiatives out there that we're going to be implementing. Some of them are very low cost, you know. But, you know, there are some things, adding shoulders, buying right-of-way. In Anoka County, let me tell you, property, buying right-of-way is very expensive. They can, the right-of-way acquisition can exceed the cost of the reconstruction project. So, you know, those are things that are very important. Those are issues that we'd like to address. One thing that costs no money would be, you know, they say that if everybody wore their seatbelt, 50% of the fatalities out there would not occur. You know, so there's a, I know there's been legislation about making seatbelt a primary offense and things like that. Now, obviously, that's a legislative issue that has no cost to it that can have a huge safety benefit. So those are some of the policy things that I was going to go into more detail, but those are the type of things that could be implemented also to address safety. It's a combination of things.
We have now two testifiers, and we have 19 people, so I hope the members would kind of condense your questions, if you would, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fisher, did I see on your on the policy priorities or policy list the ending the sales tax on the sales tax exemption, finally stopping that double taxation, levying property taxes, and then having to charge pay sales tax on top of that?
Right.
I just want to see if my math is right. I did a quick little. Of the $21 million, roughly, that's being spent on transportation, essentially, if most of it's going into roads and roughly 4% of that budget's being paid on taxes, assuming there's payroll and health care, and that $710,000 would go into roads by just the state stopping this double taxation, is that, I assume that's why you're advocating for it, is that correct?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Everything from road salt to concrete and asphalt.
Thank you.
Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fisher, appreciate your testimony. And looking at page 3 on your handout, sir, I was particularly interested in the what was called the clogged arteries there and the red coloring that you used, followed by the required additional lanes. You know, as you can see by the shape of the map,
Our county here is shaped like a funnel, so we're getting a lot of traffic that goes through, as you mentioned. With that red F level of service, which is so terrible and needs 6 to 8 lanes of highway and additional lanes on Highway 10 there, you know, I think if most people listen to the radio in the morning, usually it's Highway 10 and Hanson Boulevard that's always mentioned as one of the worst traffic areas in the city. And I wish you could give this presentation to each individual legislator and they would understand why I'm always complaining about the bad traffic on Highway 10 and our needs up here. But I'm wondering if you could just make a quick comment on, about the highway, about the MnDOT formula for how things are set up with fatalities, because on Highway 10 there, when traffic's only moving about 5 miles an hour, there's very few fatalities, a lot of, you know, bumper crashes, but the MnDOT formula works against us when you look at that situation where the traffic is moving so slowly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tingelstad, yes, that's exactly right, and that's when you saw that one crash map that I had. You saw in this area lots of crashes. But again, the fatalities were out here. Now, where MnDOT has a very significant crash and fatality hazard is Highway 65. Because once again, that's a 60, 65 mile an hour road with at grade intersections. And, you know, again, especially at intersections that aren't signalized, there's enough congestion out there that people get impatient. When people get impatient, they start taking chances. And that's when something bad happens. So, you know, that's really what we're seeing. The interstate highway system is the safest highway system in the world, without a doubt. What we're seeing, again, is the county highway system, the deficient county highway system, where people are having these accidents, these congested expressways, trunk highway expressways. That's where we're having the fatalities. So, yeah, we see a lot of crashes, and the volume of crashes we still need to address. But, you know, if we want to address fatalities, you know, it's going to be in the rural areas of the county.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Appreciate your testimony. There's a lot of things that we should be aware of, and I think we are, but again, the answer sometimes is funding, it appears that way. I neglected to... introduce Representative Hackbars. I forgot about. I think he's still here, isn't he?
Oh, there he is.
He's in the back. He didn't get a chance to introduce himself. And we also have Representative Gardner. You want to introduce yourself? Give you a chance to speak.
Hi. Paul Gardner, representing District 53A in the House, including I live in Shoreview and I'm next to North Oaks, but I also represent all Lexington Circle Pines. 3/7 of Lino Lakes and a very small part of Blaney.
And Senator Asleason, I believe, is in the audience somewhere. Olson, yeah. I said Asleason. Yeah. If you wanted to identify where you're from, I think maybe some of the audience would appreciate it.
I have Chicago County, and most of my friends and then I have friends. Very pleased to hear you guys here and hearing the testimony coming in here, especially on the traffic problems throughout the state in all of our districts.
Yeah, thank you. Our next testifier is Mr. Yantos. Is that correct? He's the executive director of the North Star Corridor Development Authority.
Chairman, I get to give you a very quick update on the North Star Corridor. Of you have worked very hard. Representative Tingelstad, Hortman, and Abler have worked very hard to bring us where we are today. We are certainly moving forward. This is a 40-mile commuter rail and about 4 blocks of light rail that we're building. We have 5 different stations, Big Lake, Elk River, Coon Rapids, and, of course, the downtown Minneapolis. Many partners have been involved with this project, the Federal Transit Administration, the Council, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, MnDOT, Minnesota Twins, and the North Star Corridor Development Authority. The cost of this project is $320 million. You can see the breakout between the federal government, the state, the Twins, and the Council, and then the three counties who are doing financial involvement, Anoka at $34 million, Sherburne $8 million, and Hennepin County at $8 million. A lot of work has been done in 2007 from the completion of all the different agreements with Burlington Northern Santa Fe, the starting payment for the various easements, the purchase of locomotives, the various construction for both the downtown area and the Big Lake maintenance facility. So a lot of work in just the last 6 months has moved us forward. Our choke point is moving our full funding grant agreement through the Federal Transit Administration process. Commissioner McLaughlin will talk about how many months that we have been under the process of moving paper around. We are hoping to move that paper out of Chicago and into Washington and hopefully get this full funding grant agreement, which allows the state money to be spent and North Star service to begin in 2009. A lot of construction packages now underway, the LRT connection in downtown Minneapolis, the vehicle maintenance facility indicated, commuter rail stations will be bid very soon. The locomotives are now being constructed, and the passenger coaches will be purchased very shortly. This is the maintenance facility in Big Lake. We had a groundbreaking just a couple weeks ago. Many of our 30 members, city, counties, rail authorities, MnDOT, part of that groundbreaking ceremony. You can see that work is well underway. This gives you an illustration of how the system works. This is the Big Lake station where we will have park and ride facility set up. The stations basically will all look the same. You will be able to access the train from this mini-high platform or onboard lifts if you're disabled and need to have that type of facility. The shelters themselves will have on-demand heat in the wintertime. Although the system itself will run about 98% of the time, so if your train comes in at 8:05, you will know that 8:05 is the time that the train will take off, and so you won't have to stand there very long. You'll be able to purchase your ticket at the ticket machines that will allow you to move from the commuter rail to the light rail to a bus system just by purchasing one ticket. So as we start moving away from the Big Lake station, you will see the visualization then of the maintenance facility. They are double tracked so that freight and commuter rail can run safely together. That is something that we have worked very long and hard with Burlington Northern to put together a program where Burlington Northern will dispatch the trains. They dispatch all the trains. This is, again, the maintenance facility in Big Lake, and they will operate the trains. They are very successful in operating commuter rail trains throughout the country, and they will be operating our system here. Next, we'll move right down to downtown Minneapolis. This is where the commuter rail and the light rail come together. They come together at the ballpark location. This is the Target Center. This is the light rail that ends where it ends today. We'll come down Fifth Street, and then the Burlington Northern Santa Fe line that exists today. Hennepin County Burner. This is the Ford Center right here, and this picture will show up several times as we go forward here. Again, the construction site of the new ballpark. Here is the Fifth Street Bridge, which we tore half of it down because it has such a huge hump in it. We leveled it out so that the commuter rail or the light rail will be able to travel on it very easily. You can see where the train is and all the bridge work that is going on in that location. Here, this is the Burlington Northern Santa Fe track laying machine that lays the ties and the tracks and everything all at once. This, again, is down by the where the multimodal station will be in downtown Minneapolis. It gives another visualization, gives you an idea how the commuter rail, which will be coming in on this location, and the light rail on the Fifth Street will all work together next to the ballpark. You'll literally be able to, if you wanted to, go from the commuter rail, light rail, a few steps, you'll be into the new ballpark in downtown Minneapolis and the proposed development that is being created and discussed and planned right now. Gives you an idea of how this all starts coming together and how that area will look in very few years. So as you get off the train, on the lower level, elevator or escalator will take you up to the upper level. And then you'll see the area that we will be building the next four blocks that will connect the light rail, which is taking off again right next to the ballpark, and traveling down the new section that we have built, so that no longer do we have just a 40-mile commuter rail line, but we have a 52-mile regional system. So you'll be able to go from Big Lake, Elk River, Anoka to the airport or to the Mall of America or to the Veterans Hospital or any place in downtown Minneapolis, and also you will have a reverse commute in the same direction. So we indeed are building a regional system that takes you from the rural area to the urban area. People are also working on phase two. There's a phase two committee that works with the North Star Corridor Development Authority. We're looking at how the system gets built from Big Lake to St. Cloud and beyond into Benton County. Next will be Commissioner Dan Earhart and Commissioner Peter McLaughlin to talk a little bit more about the different policies as it relates to transit.
Mr. Yantos, would you identify yourself for the tape, please?
I'm sorry. Tim Yantos. I'm the chair of the commuter rail project.
Thank you for your testimony. Oh, Commissioner McLaughlin and Earhart, I assumed you were coming up, but I better call you.
Thank you, Chairman Leader, members of the committee, and other members of the legislature that are here this evening. We're really pleased that you folks have come here and to Anoka County, and so many of you. So I think this is certainly an important event, and it's important that you take this kind of interest in transportation. I'm again Dan Earhart, and I'm chair of the North Star Development Authority, also chair of the Rail Authority for Anoka County. And just for information, I'm co-chair of a line that we're looking at going to Duluth. That's called passenger rail, a little different system and kind of an interesting different way of financing that. North Star Development Authority has been around for about 10 years now. We just celebrated the 10th anniversary of that, along with the groundbreaking for the maintenance facility and the Fifth Street extension in Minneapolis. And it has been quite an interesting process. I have been personally involved with trying to achieve rail construction in the metropolitan area here for the last 20-some years. And because of dedication and persistence by 30 different communities that would be townships, cities, counties, and then in partnering with the state of Minnesota and the Metropolitan Council, and never leaving our eye off the goal, we are now to the point of celebrating the 10th anniversary and about ready to submit the full funding grant agreement to the Office of Management and Budget and to the legislature, and hopefully that'll result in receiving that full funding grant agreement before the end of the year. During this process, there have been many hurdles and many difficulties, and as was mentioned earlier, some of you have shared those intimately with us, Kathy and Jim and Melissa and others. And there was a lot of disappointments and a lot of trouble. But that was a learning process, and we were looked at how we proceed through this and how future rail lines will have to deal with the kinds of problems that we faced. And I think with your help and with you looking at that, there are a couple of things that I just want to mention. Because of the difficulties and the complications of transit, the seven-county area formed the Metropolitan Transit Development Association and the Transitways Development Board, I should say, and that is chaired by Peter McLaughlin. And I'm going to ask that he follow me in talking about a couple of issues that were difficult and will be more difficult to deal with. And that's that we really need a dedicated funding source. It creates a great deal of complicated difficulty in dealing with the federal government if we don't have a funding source that is identified as specifically for transit, these rail systems. Also, we need a regional approach to funding of these rail transitways. And that is because, for example, if we run North Star, and we will, up to Big Lake, it runs within a few feet of Wright County. However, because they're not in the counties that are funding this, namely mostly Hennepin, Sherburne, and Anoka, they don't pay anything, and the riders can come over there. In fact, they're building facilities to allow riders and selling at that as access to the rail system. And so we're asking you, and I'm going to, and Peter McLaughlin here is going to talk a little bit more in detail, that you in the next legislative session look at this a dedicated funding source and a regional approach to financing these rail lines. Peter, who is chair of the Metro Transit Development Board and certainly been a leader of rail systems in this metro area for many, many years and has done just a wonderful job of bringing Hiawatha rail line into fruition and working so closely with many of us throughout the metro area and the state to give us a more comprehensive and better transit system. So with that, Peter McLaughlin.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the chance to come before you tonight. I want to be pretty straightforward. After being around the going around the barn a number of times on this issue, starting on the Transportation Committee of the House in 1985, we've come to the conclusion at the Metro Transitways Development Board that the system for funding transit is broken. And we need to take this moment, assess where we need to go, and move it forward. So I'm Peter McLaughlin, chair of the Metro Transitways Development Board. It's the seven regional railroad authorities in the metropolitan area working as a joint powers board. The federal system for funding these projects is run by the Federal Transit Administration called New Starts. It's got two basic parts. It's got a project justification rating and a project finance rating. The project justification is the argument for the project. It's, for example, on North Star. Highway 10 is heavily congested. Its development in the corridor is occurring rapidly. There's a great connection with Hiawatha as a part of the creation of a metro system, and it could replace 1.5 lanes of traffic if it were put in. The project finance rating, which is the other half of the project, the system that develops the project recommendation, is about the financing of the project and whether what's available for on the operating side, the capital side, and this non-Section 5309 share, which is the non-federal share. All of that leads to a project recommendation. The process here is long and complicated. I'm not going to go through this diagram with you. It's long and complicated. The projects are rated by the Federal Transit Administration each and every year, and they look at these criteria that I just described to you. Delay is not our friend here in the state of Minnesota. It drives up the cost of these projects, and it reduces the scope of the project. An example on North Star was that the Fridley Station was eliminated because of delays. Because we just, and the $11 million a year in annual inflation on that project. Now, across the country, the competition for these federal funds is fierce. There are 22 projects nationwide in preliminary engineering or final design. That's well along in the process. The Federal Transit Administration is tracking over 100 major transit projects in alternatives analysis stage. That's the first stage where the local communities are trying to decide what's the level of investment that needs to be made. Half of the money for these projects generally comes from the federal government. This is new money coming into the state. There's a lot of projects competing for this money. We had better be able to compete if we're going to bring our share of the money into the state of Minnesota. Because, for the record, New Starts can't be used for roads. It's about major transit investments. And if we don't get our fair share of the money by competing actively for this federal tax dollars that we and our taxpayers all contribute, the money's going to go to Denver or Seattle or Dallas or Phoenix or any of a number of other eager seekers of this money, and these are regions that compete with us economically. So Our current method of funding transit is broken, especially in our competition for these new starts funds from the federal government. Half of the cost of the project. We're not ready, and the deficiencies include our competition for full funding grant agreements, cash flow for project construction, and funding for operations. We're deficient on all three of those fronts. Let's talk about the first one, competing for the full funding grant agreement. That's essentially the contract with the federal government that we're waiting to get for North Star. We're about this far away, and that's what will be the commitment from the federal government to provide half of the funding for the project. Local commitments for capital and operating costs, and by local I mean county rail authorities or the state of Minnesota, those are critical factors in that rating process that I showed you earlier on in the presentation. Waiting for state bonding approval weakens our FTA rating. Lack of dedicated operating funds weakens the FTA rating that we get, and therefore we're less able to compete. And we've been through this a number of times, that where we don't have the state commitment, state share for the North Star project, and we end up falling short. Let me just give you a few more details on North Star. 75 months in preliminary engineering because of the lack of state bonding commitment. Without that commitment of the full local share, local and state share, and the counties were ready to go early in this process, but the state money wasn't there, the project got delayed because we weren't getting good ratings from the federal government. That's the longest duration of any project in the country in preliminary engineering. Typical project takes only 24 to 36 months. Cost of construction increases. During the process in North Star, the New Start rules changed right out from under us. The calculations that had to be made to qualify. And the Fridley Station had to be deferred because of the cost increases. So delay is not our friend. Lack of ability to compete because we can't, for these full funding grant agreements, hurts us. The conclusion that we've drawn at the Metro Transit Ways Development Board is that a dedicated source of funding would have resulted in earlier completion of North Star, lower project costs, and additional service such as a station at Fridley. Second deficiency, cash flow during construction. Prior to FTA approval of a full funding grant agreement, a project has to demonstrate the ability to cash flow the construction for early work performed under a letter of no prejudice or for land acquisition, just to keep the project moving. And it's also we need cash flow to cover delays in the receipt of federal funds. They don't always come in a timely fashion to get these projects completed. North Star cash flow, we had Anoka, Hennepin, and Sherburne County Regional Rail Authorities providing $50 million in upfront money for final design and purchase of BNSF commuter rail easements. We also provided a $46 million loan to MnDOT to cover construction prior to a full funding grant agreement. These are numbers that go beyond what our local share in this project was supposed to be. We'll get it back, but we're the ones cash flowing this. Met Council provided $10 million in advance funding for locomotive acquisition, and MnDOT borrowed highway funds, and they're going to pay with interest, to cover delays in the receipt of federal funds. So we've got kind of a jerry-rigged system here for cash flowing these projects, and it's not in our interest. On Hiawatha, Hennepin County Rail Authority provided $84 million for that project, $20 million in cash, $50 million in bond proceeds, and $14 million in land and earlier studies that were done. All of that money, all $84 million, was committed by the early stages of construction. So Hennepin County was cash flowing the construction of the Hiawatha LRT line. Now, we've also funded advanced funding of two LRT cars that were going to be part of the North Star project so that they could be put in service, and now they're in service as part of the Hiawatha line. And Met Council has come to us just in the past week to ask us if we would do the same with Central Corridor LRT, an advance fund, the purchase of new LRT cars that are going to be necessary to expand Hiawatha from two-car trains to three-car trains because there's so much demand for it. So we've got, again, a system that's not working. It's being put together with Band-Aids and bailing wire. So our conclusion is a dedicated source of transit funding would provide a more systematic and cost-effective approach to project cash flow, but cash flow now is largely provided by regional railroad authorities, and that's not an adequate way to go forward if we're going to compete for these federal funds. Deficiency number three is funding for operations. Currently, in a non-statutory structure, the state provides 50% of the cost of the operating costs over and above the fare box. County regional railroad authorities provide the other half. We've got several concerns about that. ridership on these lines clearly is not limited by county boundaries. All you have to do is go to the park and ride down at Fort Snelling or near the Mall of America. You can count the folks coming in from Dakota County. And we're glad they're coming, but they're not paying for the operating costs. It's taxpayers, property taxpayers in Hennepin County who are paying for that. We think the property tax is an inappropriate source of funds for transit subsidy. That was the impetus behind part of the 2001 tax bill, and now we're going back in the other direction. We're being asked for a $7 million contribution just for Hiawatha in 2008. And if you start adding line after line after line, this is going to add up to a huge new property tax burden, which we think is inappropriate. Plus, bus and rail are not treated the same way. It's like special rules for rail. Our conclusion, again, is that a dedicated source of funding for transitway operations would provide, one, property tax relief and a more equitable system for paying for operating costs, as well as providing, making us more competitive for the federal funds. So we think a dedicated source of funding would provide greater competitiveness for Minnesota projects seeking federal funding, a reliable, cost-effective approach to cash flow requirements, property tax relief, and a more equitable system for funding operating costs. And we are on record as the Transitways Development Board for a half-cent sales tax in the metropolitan area for both roads and transit. The sales tax is used in other regions around the country. We've looked at alternatives. We do not think there is an adequate alternative to the sales tax to provide the kind of investment that we need to be making in our transit system and in our road system here in the metropolitan area. Now, some will say, well, the taxes, it'll make us uncompetitive. The fact of the matter is that if we added a half-cent sales tax in the metropolitan area, the sales tax would still be higher in Dallas, in Phoenix, San Diego, Seattle, Atlanta, Chicago, Cleveland, and New York. It would be about the same in Denver after we've raised the tax by half a cent. Denver City. And in the Denver suburbs, their taxes are well above what the tax would be in the Twin City suburbs if we put a half-cent sales tax in place. So our conclusion is it's time to fix Minnesota's broken transit funding system. And we ask you, Mr. Chairman, and members of this committee of the Minnesota House to step forward and provide the leadership so that we can compete for these federal funds and create the kind of transit system and transportation system that we need to compete economically in the decades ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Before we get to questions, we are in a dilemma here, just like you are with you. I'm trying to fit all these people in with a time frame before midnight. We ended at midnight last night. And in case someone has a written testimony, if you care to certainly file it with us, and that will expedite some things. And I believe there could be just many questions on this, Commissioner. I don't know to what extent we should get into it, but are there questions really that are so imperative that we should ask? And not to full blown. Well, just one question before we get to. My understanding is next month, MnDOT has to put up some money for the commuter rail, and it isn't there unless we do some financial different changes with things. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to get Mr. Yantos up here. I'm not sure it's November. We should get
it's October. I believe October, wasn't it?
I'm not sure. Or Mary, you can.
Perhaps we don't need to dwell on that, but my understanding, I just want to know if that's correct.
This is Mary Richardson.
$35 million.
The Deputy Director of Legal and Intergovernmental Affairs for the North Star Project. And MnDOT is not putting up any money in October or November. The state bonding funds become available upon execution of the full funding grant agreement with the federal government. MnDOT is looking at cash flowing the project for delays in federal funding that come after the full funding grant agreement is executed in December.
They have to put up some money in either November or December then. Is that the way you're saying?
No, I'm saying it will be after December.
My understanding, I had a meeting with me, and they told me it was in October. $35 million. For commuter rail, that's what this is, right?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we'll have to get back to you with that. I'm not familiar with that.
We have some questions, and how many questions do we have?
I just wanted to make one quick comment. I represent Burnsville and Egan, and I'm door knocking, and people, I, I,
I'm coming across the people that are using it. They love it. They want it, Megan and Burnsville.
Thank you.
So, I mean, it's...
Representative Nelson.
Here we go. On top of the funds that are...
On the top of the funds that are being... Has to be advanced
for us for the rail. I understand that they're all... The MnDOT's also asking Hennepin County to come up with advanced funds to do the Devil's Triangle and get that started.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, within a week of the end of the legislative session, our Public Works staff received a call from MnDOT staff asking us to finance up somewhere between $25 and $30 million on the Devil's Triangle project, a state highway project, and they wanted us to provide the financing for that. This, of course, after the increase in our bonding authority was vetoed by the governor. So, yes, they are asking us, and they're asking other counties and cities across the region to do it. We can get this committee a list of those requests, but it's kind of high. At some point, Mr. Chairman, it gets to be fiscally irresponsible, even though we want these projects, and people need the project. That's a great project. But at some point, putting our property tax backing behind these projects gets to be irresponsible. And that's, again, we're kind of putting things together with baling wire, and it's not a real system.
That was my point. Thank you, sir.
Further questions? Not. Thank you very much, Commissioner. We really appreciate it. Councilmember Dan Elvick from the City of Ramsey.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you for being here this evening and give us a wonderful audience. I know it's a tremendous burden to go from city to city, especially as late as you went last night, so I appreciate you being here this evening. It's a little challenging for me. I'm following all these professional full-timers, and I'm a part-timer over in the City of Ramsey as a council member. I am a council member in the City of Ramsey. I'm a chair for the Public Works and past chair for finance over there. And I wanted to kind of describe what the local level officials are facing here and the challenges that we have in the area. And fortunately, Doug Fisher, as thorough as he was earlier this evening, left me a little bit of thunder on Highway 10. Highway 10, we feel, is probably the most urgent issue in this area. Of course, it bottlenecks at the bottom of Ramsey and Anoka, along with Highway 47. Highway 10, which he didn't state, and I've got mixed feelings on where this goes, but I've heard of reports everywhere from number 2 to number 3 to the number 5 fastest growing corridor, not in the state, but in the nation. Of the top 5 fastest growing corridors in the nation. I want to keep that in mind as I move forward here. Highway 47, I'm from this region my entire life, but I moved out to Ramsey 14 years ago, even as little as 5 years ago. It was the comment we'd say we're just going to zip into town and pick up some groceries or what have you. Zip into town meant Anoka, and 6.5 miles out. For me to zip into town now 6.5 miles and come to the courthouse for a meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning takes me 26 minutes. It goes 6.5 miles. I can jump over to Highway 10 and try to detour it, maybe shortcut that, but that'll take me even longer because we're choked up on Highway 10 even further than on 47. So I'll start there, but I wanted to share with you, I build furniture as a living, and I've had an opportunity to go out to Washington, D.C. here the last few months, and in my spare time, I've followed my hobby of politicking, and I decided to visit with a lot of our legislators out there. I had an opportunity to go over to Congresswoman Bachman's office and sat and spoke with her one afternoon with my napkin sketches and a few demographic studies that I'd pulled from Highway 10 and shared some of the information. It caught hold very quickly, and she instantly pulled in one staffer, two staffers, three staffers, and I was sharing with her what the impact of a positive project on Highway 10 taking out Fair Oak and improving Thurston to a thorough exchange and then running 47 down that exchange would take care of three problems on 10 and one major problem on Highway 47. It caught tremendous traction. She then asked that I'd stay around if it's all possible, that she was going to get a hold of Congressman Overstar, and that happened. I was escorted over to the Capitol into the Rayburn building, or in the Rayburn room for about an hour, and sat and spoke with the two Congress members. Delightful evening for me. But they sat around and exchanged ideas and concepts and started a strategy and talking to one another. And the first thing that impressed me is that this is a nonpartisan issue. And Congressman Ovestar kept emphatically impressing upon me that in the state of Minnesota, transportation issues are nonpartisan and should be treated as such. And they certainly were. It was very evident in front of the two of them wrestling over the issue. Congresswoman Bachman further endorsed the issue by saying, "David, this is the number one concern in my district, and it runs through the heart of my district. You certainly have my support on this. We want to fix this problem." Mr. Ovestar then also said, he grabbed me by the shoulder, looked square me in the eye, and he says, "We have another issue, and that is we can bring you funding from the federal level. Funding is available for these projects. We are two people here that are very capable and in a wonderful position to bring funding to you." The gentleman sits as the chair of the transportation. We have the opportunity. We have communities working side by side in joint powers efforts and working cooperatively with one another. We can make things move from the local level. This is a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful time for us to be able to build a new Highway 10. We seem to have some stumbling blocks, and that is the 20% match that the state has to bring forward. And this is where we're losing all of this opportunity, as evidenced and talked to about that from these two Congress members. They instantly said we need to get MnDOT on board, and the first thing we need to do is raise the STIP level because, as I share later, the interregional corridor study for Highway 10, completed in 2001, recommends that the trunk highway needs to begin to be upgraded between 2002 and 2010, estimated cost $210 million. As Doug Fisher told you earlier, not even on the radar. We're saying it needs to be upgraded by 2010. We're not even on the radar. It is on the STIP, but it's way down in the STIPL meter at the very bottom. We need some support to get this up. This is one of the most dangerous highways in the country, and it's the fastest, one of the five fastest growing corridors in the country. I'll also add that Mr. Coleman's office has shown also equal time and support and enthusiasm for the project that I brought forward and has shared time with me each time that I've stopped out to see what we can do to move this forward. Since I'm not a professional, I asked staffers to put notes together, so I'm going to share some of the notes here. The right-of-way acquisition costs in 2003 dollars totaling approximately $28 million on Highway 10, $2 million in relocation fees. Estimated market value in 2013 for the same comparisons area increased to $49 million to $3 million in relocation, 73% increase in 10 years. In 2003, the City of Ramsey took a large step to officially map the corridor and begin acquiring properties with the use of the RELF funds, the Revolving Acquisition Loan Funds, which is also echo as a tremendous tool that's been effective where we are. To date, Ramsey has purchased 9 properties for approximately $7 million. 18 more properties have interest, but the funds have run out and there aren't any more available to us at this time. The city is had been working with Congressman Kennedy, received federal funds to complete environmental and primary engineering. The three interchanges located and identified by MnDOT's IRC study. We've completed the concept planning and three interchanges, and now with the cooperation of MnDOT and Anoka County are completing the preliminary design for Sunfish Lake Boulevard and Ramsey Boulevard through Ramsey. Discussions and planning thus far have led to innovative and realistic approaches to maximize the existing resources that we do have and cooperatively implement Highway 10 corridor visions. I want to thank our MnDOT partners, Anoka County and the Met Council, for their efforts and support they've brought to us also. Trunk Highway 47, vehicles traveling on this road experienced significant delays, as I spoke of earlier. Safety concerns, 85% of the intersections that were studied were rated as the highest in the metropolitan for crash rates. 85% are on the highest level of crash rates. Population on 47, expected to increase 70% in the next 20 years, increase 50% in the same time period as far as volumes on this is a two-lane road. The City of Ramsey has been working with MnDOT, Anoka County, City of Anoka, Burns Township for a number of years trying to find solutions to the traffic congestions on 47. In May 06, the city approved an agreement that would begin looking at alternative alignments that would meet the participating agency's goals and objectives. Couple quick notes on multimodal options. The City of Ramsey is committed to providing a walkable community by moving forward with a smart growth site that provides for mixed land use, high density, and multimodal options within the core of the Ramsey Town Center. In 06, the city was fortunate to receive the CMAC funds with help from Commissioner Byrd and others, and began the Ramsey Star Express service, a bus service out of Ramsey Town Center area. The service provides an express commuter coach, Ramsey Town Center to downtown Minneapolis, and results in local participation. We threw another $310,000 locally at that from the City of Ramsey over the next 3 years. Ramsey Star Express began operating in February of this year and has increased by 185% since its start. The city is encouraged with the progress of the North Star Rail project and supports efforts to advance the projects, thereby reducing the timeline for a Ramsey station at some point in time. I wanted to go back on something that Congressman Overstar said to me, and that was that there's money available in the federal government that he would like to bring and Congresswoman Bachman would like to bring to our community. These are tax dollars we've already spent. We're trying to get back to make work in our communities. Without a state match, we can't do that. I didn't know what the gravity of the situation was, so I went back to our local municipality here and asked staff to put together a scorecard for me, and I have that in front of me here. And I didn't want to disagree with the congressman or agree, but I didn't know what the score truly was, so I'm going to read a couple of the scorecards here. These are state projects, state highway projects now that I'm going to talk about. And it's 47 construction, Highway 10 assessment management study, 47 realignment study, Highway 10 preliminary interchange design, totaling $9.3 million. Of that $9.3 million, the City of Ramsey has ponied up out of their wallet $3.9 million. The federal government has ponied out of their wallets $4.2, the county $400,000, and the state $1.1 million, which represents 12% of what the state's putting into their state highways, of which the City of Ramsey is putting in almost 50% on your state roads. So I think to myself, well, let's go a little further. The state must be putting in something in the regionals, and they've got to be helping out there. I'm sure that's what's happening. So here's the regional roadways, Bunker Lake Boulevard study, Bunker Lake Boulevard Disposium construction, County Highways Armstrong, Ramsey Boulevard, Sunfish, and the Bunker Lake crossings there. Projects totaling recently $15 million. Ramsey's participation, a little over half, $8.6 million from the little town of Ramsey. Federal government, $700,000. They don't get quite as deep in the local. The county came together with their wallet of $5.3 million, and the state came with a big goose egg. If you take a look at what's happening between the state and the regional roadways and what the state has put into our regional roadways around this area, you have a whopping 0.05% participation from the state. This is embarrassing. I'll also add that the feds had enough foresight to throw $800,000 at a bridge crossing across the Mississippi River, and the CMAC funds that we received were $4.5 million for transit. Again, Ramsey came up with $310,000 to help assist that also. What we're looking for in Ramsey, what we need your help on, are a couple of things. Fairly simple, but hard to achieve. One is Highway 10 and Highway 47 need to be raised up on the stiff level to a very acceptable, very high level, and we need your support. We need more available RELF funds. It's a tremendous program. It's worked well for us, and it's going to save us a tremendous amount of dollars in the long run. On top of that, you can see that the City of Ramsey has stayed very committed to transit improvements. It's the number one issue in any one of our elections, and we're going to stay committed to these transit improvements. We've put our back into this. We need our legislative body to step forward to the plate, and I implore you to hold one another accountable and take the partisanship out of this issue. We need a cooperative spirit, and we need to get the work done. What we need is your leadership, what we need is your creativity, what we need is your vision, and what we need is the work done, and we need it done now. I thank you for your time. Any questions?
Thank you, Representative Hartman.
I'll be really brief. One thing I wanted to mention is last night we did get done at 10 in Mankato, but it did take us 2 hours to drive home, so don't be alarmed. We won't be here till midnight.
And that was without traffic, right?
Some people will be driving until midnight, so don't be alarmed. But with regard to your last comment, it takes two willing parties to compromise. And, we could capitulate and we could lay, roll over and play dead, but we're willing to compromise.
Very good. We need the leadership, too. Very true. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I presume a lot of people like to stand up and stretch. Well, the next gentleman is coming up. If you'd want to stand up and stretch, that'd be great. Mr. Wambach was requested that he could leave before 9, and if he could come up, I certainly we can accommodate that. Is it? Mr. Wambach is, and maybe he's gone. We can take the next.
Oh,
he coming? I'm sure they all would. Who's that? Huh? I'll get her next. Is Mr. Wambach, are you ready to go? Huh? Oh, I thought you wouldn't leave by 9. Yeah, that'd be fine. Why don't you do it? Go ahead. Huh?
Good.
Could we have the audience come back so we get going? Will you identify yourself for the committee too, Mr. Wambach?
Certainly. I'm Andrew Wambach, and I'm a resident of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Most of my speaking points have all been taken up by the professionals, but I really agree with what they're saying, and I'm really impressed to be hearing it. The only things I'd like to say to the committee are is that we need improvements in both roads and transit to reduce travel times, improve efficiency, move people and products, as well as ensure the safety of our transportation system, and that I really want to stress that the issue of transportation affects everyone in Minnesota. We need bipartisan efforts based on reality and a comprehensive vision for the future. And I love the work you guys are doing. You guys are great leaderships, but it takes two to tangle, like Melissa Hartman says. And then another guy in the back just said, we really need the governor here to have this happen. Like, we need to have, we have local, county, we need state. We have the local and the county, but we need the state to make the final step. I love what you guys are doing. Bravo.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wambach. And I think you should recognize that we assume, I think most of us assume, if we have a bill coming out, it's going to be a transportation bill, not strictly highway or not strictly transit. We need the total bill. So thank you for your time.
My last comment is I was an urban studies major at the University of Minnesota. I'm wondering how to get into this field. Do you need a civil engineering degree? What kind of degree do you need to get into transportation planning? Because right now I'm working at the Reuse Center in Minneapolis, loading product, trying to keep building materials out of landfills. But that really doesn't work with my interest of transportation planning. I'd like to work with high-speed rail. What kind of, like, stuff would I need to do to get there? Like, that's the question I posed to the committee.
Well, why don't you check with Commissioner Earhart or Commissioner Laughlin?
Laughlin?
Yeah.
I'll finally email him. Don't worry about
great,
it.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Sue Sack, too, from the Isaiah Group. Wow. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. My name is Susan Sack. I'm an active member of this community, and I worship at St. Joseph's the Worker Catholic Church in Maple Grove. I'm also co-chair of the Northwest Caucus of Isaiah, and I'm here tonight to speak to the need for an increased investment in our transit system. Isaiah is an interfaith organization of over 85 congregations from Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the Twin Cities suburbs and St. Cloud. Acting out of our faith values of social justice, our goal is to create systemic change on matters of real importance to the community of the Twin Cities Metro and across the state of Minnesota. I'm privileged to own both a car and a home, yet I commute to my job in downtown Minneapolis by bus. I do this not only to save money on gas and parking, but because I believe public transportation is better for the environment and for the future of the world we live in. Although I could walk 4 or 5 blocks to my from my house to catch a bus, I choose to drive to the Maple Grove Transit Station because express buses run more frequently to and from there, giving me more options. Recently, we were handed a letter as we boarded the bus in the morning, and the letter stated that due to a spike in ridership beginning in September, the 3-level, 924-stall parking ramp at the Maple Grove Transit Station is at capacity by 8:25 a.m. We were encouraged to use alternative transit routes and park and ride lots if we could to free up more spaces at the transit station. In addition, one more morning and afternoon trip would be added to the Walmart park and ride lot. This is a short-term solution to a long-term problem. A long-term plan includes a large park and ride facility near the future Highway 610 and I-94. However, a shortage of transit funds prevents setting a solid timeline for this option. Much of my work with Isaiah involves meetings and planning with other congregations around the Twin Cities. I'm not able to participate in most daytime and some of the evening activities because I can't get there from work during the day. And if I can get there by bus from Minneapolis in the evening, I have no way to get back to my car in Maple Grove afterwards, since the last bus from Minneapolis to Maple Grove leaves just before 6:15 p.m. For the same reason, attending sports events, concerts, or shows in the evening in Minneapolis is not an option for me unless I drive my car to work. I can drive my car to work in Minneapolis if I have to, but what about all the people who don't have that option? Their lives are defined by the limits of our transit system. Where and when they go to work or school, visit friends and family, seek health care or other services, or participate in events and activities in other neighborhoods and communities is based on the availability of public transportation. Even if they can get to and from work, they may not be able to attend meetings or events in the evenings or on weekends when the buses aren't available. The lack of a comprehensive public transportation system then becomes a barrier, keeping people from contributing to and benefiting from the abundance and the wealth of our state. A comprehensive public transit system is essential to ensuring economic and social opportunities for everyone. To ensure that we have a successful comprehensive public transit system, we need an adequate, dedicated, and stable source of funding. I believe public transit is an investment in our children and in our future of our communities, and I'm willing to make that investment. I support a metro area sales tax dedicated to transportation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I guess there are no questions. The next person is Michael Kraft, chair of the Government and Public Affairs Committee of the North Metro Chamber.
Great. Chairman, leader, members of the committee. I just have a few notes I'd like to go over in detail tonight. Now, my name is Mike Kraft, and I represent the Metro North Chamber of Commerce and the more than 700 businesses we represent in Anoka County. And I'm speaking in support of many of the specifics that Mr. Fisher has described earlier. As a chamber, our job is to encourage business and to advocate on behalf of business community. When you speak with government officials, as a rule, the message is simple. Please lower our taxes and stop spending so much money. However, when you bring up transportation with our members, you quickly discover the exception to this rule. Highway 169 in the West Metro used to have the reputation of being crowded at midnight on a Sunday. Unfortunately, that dubious crown seems to be landing on Highway 10 as it winds its way through Coon Rapids, Anoka, and beyond. Our Government Affairs and Public Policy Committee decided last year to become more focused on specific issues. And transportation was the overwhelming first choice. In fact, it's become such an issue that we've spent most of our meetings this year learning about options for getting some progress. We like to invite people from either downtown to our meetings. They usually show up late with an apology about not expecting so much traffic. We chuckle knowingly, but with little satisfaction, because we know but the unexpected traffic is costing us money every day. Anoka County continues to develop as one of the best places to raise families and grow businesses, but we stand to lose that momentum if traffic continues to eat away at our residents' time and our business profits. Our members rely on the transportation system to move their products and employees quickly and safely. With no major east-west route and deficient capacity running north-south, our ability to grow business is strapped for the wrong reasons. As a chamber, we support moderate increases in ongoing transportation investments and the use of bonding to jumpstart projects and limit the impact of inflation. We'd encourage you to develop a transportation package that maximizes the impact of our tax dollars and begins to make up for the lack of funding in recent decades. Our members continually tell us that transportation is one of the highest priorities for business. The impact of a deficient system hits home every day for us. We'd ask you to work as effectively as you can and make this a priority on behalf of the state and on behalf of business. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Since Representative Earhart isn't here today, I'll ask the question that he would likely ask, which is, have you had any conversations with the state chamber, and is your transportation plan or position different than theirs?
Pretty close to theirs. We try to, as a business community, we try to present a united front, and we talk a lot with the state chamber and other chambers as well. And so we generally try and align what work together with the other chambers so that business is presenting a front. And yes, all of the major chambers that we've discussed with have supported moderate increases in gas tax, and we would support that as well. We think that business is, it's one of the few things that business is standing behind in terms of increasing investments.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, I think regrettably the state chamber has opposed the majority of the legislators' positions on this, which is a comprehensive bill that includes transit and road improvements, and modest isn't really good enough when we've got so much unmet need. And so I really hope that we can continue the conversation, because I think the business community is really important. I think, as Commissioner McLaughlin mentioned, we're falling behind our competitors. We're not able to access federal funds, and in the long term, we're losing money by paying so much interest on bonds and all of these delays. And I think that we need to have you as a partner and not an opponent to what we're trying to do. So I do really appreciate your being here, and I hope that we can be on the same page, because the opposition I think has been quite troubling to many of us.
Representative, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's me. I'm just following it. Thank you. I'd like to follow on Representative Hornstein. We heard from the Greater Mankato Area Chamber last night. It supported a 10-cent gas tax increase in 2006. Mentioning on bonding, I was a member of the conference committee, as well as a number of people here, and we had bonding as part of it. Bonding, though, takes care of about 10% or less of the need that MnDOT projects. I guess I would ask, could we know in a little bit more detail what modest might mean in terms of the gas tax increase?
So far, the chambers that we have had conversation with have been in support of the bills that represented a 5-cent tax increase starting out, with the opportunity and potential for discussing more at a later time. But that's been the position most of the chambers we've been in conversation with.
Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kraft, with the businesses in Anoka County, I'm wondering if you have any estimates of costs to quantify the cost to businesses for traffic congestion. I know Holland Trucking off of Highway 10 is a major employer in the area. Do you have any idea with the cost to the community, the businesses here?
Sure. Most of our information is anecdotal, and we have not had a study that's been able to summarize or pull together the actual real dollar cost. I have a hunch most people are afraid to see that number.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kraft, for being here. As a member of the business community, I agree with Representative Hornstein. We really need to be partners with you. And the real hang-up with coming to agreement with the business community has been on transit funding. In Eden Prairie, you're seeing the business community strongly supporting the Eden Prairie rail line. Up here, we see strong support of the North Star Commuter Rail. What we really would love to hear from the business community is the proposal of how to fund transit.
right.
I think it's a great step forward to support a gas tax increase of any kind, because I understand that's a bold new direction for your organization. But we have to have a complete package. And so we're open for input. We propose the half-cent regional sales tax. We know that the chamber opposes that. We're looking for another stream of revenue that would raise $140 million a year to fund the transit projects that we're talking about. So, you know, the business leaders that you deal with every day are creative problem solvers. In their businesses, they have to figure out creative ways to meet their funding needs. Please put your creativity to use, and if you oppose the regional half-cent sales tax, let us know what other ways we can raise $140 million a year.
Great. We look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that, Representative Hortman kind of asked a little bit of the question there, Mr. Kraft. My question was to the chamber in terms of what is the stand of the chamber on a half-cent regional sales tax. And I guess one of the issues that I think that is pertinent that could have been negotiated, should have been negotiated, and really didn't get negotiated, was the issue that businesses be exempt from the regional half-cent sales tax, since they are a source of revenue for the city, and how the chamber, if that discussion has ever come up, if that would be something that they would be in favor of, so it would be restricted to residential, which is mostly the people that are using transit to facilitate that.
That is the kind of topic that should come up. It has not come up in any of the literature that we've read through in the discussions that we've had, but as you know, with 45% of those taxes being paid directly by business, that's a major piece of the resistance and the fear and concern that businesses have. So I think that's a wise place to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft and Mr. Chairman. That's my hopes, is that in this discussion that's coming up this time, we have that opportunity to have the discussion that businesses who are providing the bulk of the opportunity for tax revenue in the Metro Seven County Metro area are exempt from that provision. I think we'd probably get a lot more support.
I think it'd be a good subject, but we don't want to get in a debate here, I'm sure. Representative Kaling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick notion of support for where Representative Severson is going, just to engage the conversation a little bit more, that I think you'll find more and more Democrats, DFLers, who believe very strongly in a fair tax system, are reticent to apply more business taxes because it does get passed down, as we know. I think it's 91% or something like that is the number, six in my brain, gets passed through to consumers. And so, and we know that just becomes a hit on business yes. at the sales counter. But I heard you say that you haven't fully calculated the congestion tax and the tax of idle trucks, and because you're afraid of that number. I think a lot of us who are hesitant to always be supporting raising taxes and be worried about the value that we get for them. I know I came around to supporting the gas tax wholeheartedly because of that very piece of it, watching the trucks that delivered to the business I worked at in North Branch. It only had 8 to 10 trucks a week, a tiny little business exporting to Japan and Sweden, still only 8 to 10 trucks, but they were taking longer and longer, and we had guys waiting till 4 and 5 on first shift to load up these trucks. I really encourage you to work with your business folks to look at what the value of the gas tax at 10 cents, which still only gets us a quarter of the way to the needs that MnDOT has. 42 cents would get us to the 2.4 million. I think that's right? 42 cents gets us almost all the way to what we need to do annually of our unmet needs. So I think looking at what does going beyond 5 cents actually mean as a return on investment for businesses, I'm happy to work with you and talk a little bit more about some of what we've heard up in the little bit further north from you. And I appreciate your openness and look forward to working together to get something done this next coming year.
Perfect.
Senator Carlson.
Yeah, I guess I have one thing that I would like to also remind the chamber in that I believe it was in October of 2004 the chamber came out for a 10-cent gas tax, and it was to raise $650 million a year. And me being a pack rat, I happen to have kept that article in my garage and found it on Sunday and was cleaning it out. And I was just looking to see if I had a copy of it with me, and I don't, but I see Mr. Rick Cougar back there, and I gave him a copy of it today. And so he might have a copy of the article if you need to look back and see what
chamber was actually supporting back 3 years ago. And I think it would be important that you look at the same rationale that was used in that article.
Excellent. Terrific.
Representative Hortman, again?
Representative Leader, I'm sorry, but Senator Carlson, that was in 2002, just prior to the gubernatorial election in 2003, which changed everything. So the 10-cent position went away sometime during the 2002 gubernatorial campaign.
I think you got a lot of information, Mr. Kraft, which you don't need anymore.
Thank you very much
for your testimony. Appreciate it. Mark Steffertson, the mayor of City of Maple Grove.
Thank you, Chair Leader and members of the committee. I'm Mark Steffertson, the mayor of Maple Grove. I'm also here tonight in my capacity as the president of the North Metro Mayors Association. The North Metro Mayors Association was established in 1987 to advocate for public and private investment in our member communities. We are 21 communities that range across the northwest suburbs, including many of the suburbs located in Anoka County, such as Ramsey, over to Circle Pines and Lexington, and then it goes down and actually includes Minneapolis as a member as well. Our message tonight to this committee is rather simple. It's time for the legislature and the governor to adopt a transportation funding plan that meets the needs of our state. According to MnDOT, we have a $24 billion funding gap that was identified 3 years ago. I assume today it's probably over $30 billion. How much deeper in this gap, this funding transportation hole that we've created, do we need to go before the state takes action? Things need to be done. You've heard tonight, everyone's been up here talking about the fact that action needs to be taken, and I'm here to tell you the same. The evidence of the harm this lack of funding has created in the northwest suburbs is apparent. Good examples have already been talked about tonight. Trunk Highway 10. You've heard repeatedly about how Trunk Highway 10 needs to be expanded. In my community, Highway 610. You've heard me testify in St. Paul about Highway 610. Highway 610 ends in a potato field. Why? I don't know. It's the last portion of the metropolitan transportation system that isn't built. In Maple Grove, we acquired the right-of-way for the major portions of this road in 1976. Today, those are simply grass fields. A portion of the Highway 610 has now been completed with the adjustment of Highway 81. Because of the lack of funds, we have put dirt, black dirt, over the roadbed and have planted grass because there's no immediate prospect of the road being built. It's a beautiful place for the geese to feed, and that's what they do today, instead of cars driving on that road. I talked about Trunk Highway 10. Representative Nelson has talked about the Devil's Triangle and brought that up. Here's a project that was delayed this year because of a lack of funding for Crosstown. It was supposed to be built this year. Now they've talked about building it next year. I doubt if it'll be built next year because where's the funding going to come from? With one project that you haven't heard about in the northwest suburbs here tonight really is the expansion of I-35W north. I-35W going north out of the metropolitan area up to Forest Lake, up to North Branch, needs to be expanded. It's a critical road for that part of the state. Where is that funding? It's a very critical road. We all know what it is. It's not even in the 2030 MnDOT plan. How that can be? Well, there's no funding for it, so it's not in the 2030 plan. We need significant new funding. There's no doubt about that. And we need to find a way to do it. And I think that as we have a discussion about that, there needs to be really three fundamental principles that we rely upon. One is the reliance upon increased user fees. It has to happen. There has to be a certainty of funding. You heard about it even from the rail transportation system. We have to have a certainty of funding so our communities can plan. I mean, Maple Grove, we spent $15 million in the last 2 years on an interstate interchange because there isn't the funding there from the state. We need prudent fiscal management. We need to have the funds available so we can build our roads. We believe it's appropriate with regards to user fees that the users of the transportation system pay for their system. It just otherwise is sort of ridiculous. And I think that's the direction we're going today because we see more and more today an emphasis on property taxes supporting the system instead of the actual users paying to use the system they use. We need to have a discussion about immediate action to increase such fees as vehicle registration fees. Obviously, those were reduced a few years ago. We need to revisit that issue. We need to look at fuel user fees. We need to look at the gas tax. We need to look at other options so we make sure that we have the funding we need. Obviously, I think it's also very important in our system to have transparency. I think that we find that our citizens are very willing to pay for roads when they know that those roads are going to be built or what the money is going to go for. It's only when it's uncertain as to what's going to happen to the money do our taxpayers become concerned and challenge or oppose these type of increases. I think it's also important to realize that an entire generation of drivers in Minnesota have not experienced a user rate increase. The last user rate increase was 1988. It is 20 years later. A great majority of our citizens have never seen an increased rate. Back in 1988, gas cost about a dollar. The taxes were what they are today. It was about 20% of the gas cost. If we've already heard tonight earlier mentions about where we'd be today if that cost had sort of continued to escalate at that 20%. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't have this meeting today. Or if we did, it would be a wholly different topic. We need to have a dependable funding stream that has to be taken into account. One thing that I think that this committee needs to look into the future is the real issue with biodiesel, with the other forms of cars that are coming out. The gas taxes are going to become a less reliable source of funding. And we have to understand that and plan for that. We need to take that into account, because if we don't take that into account, we're going to be really shortchanged in the years to come. And so we're going to have to look at some method or technology to account for road usage. I know that in Washington, Seattle, they've addressed, or they've looked at that, or is it Oregon? I forget. There's a West Coast Oregon site where they've looked at that issue. And we need to look at different methods so we can make sure that as we go forward in time, we have a financial certainty of money coming into our system. And we need to have prudent management. I think one of the big concerns that we as a metropolitan community, set of communities have, is that we note that $21 billion of the $24 billion in unmet needs, according to MnDOT, are in the metropolitan area. And I think that there needs to be an addressing by the legislature of that concern, that disparity between outstate and the metropolitan area. There are clearly bottleneck areas and interregional corridor projects that need to be done. We know that those are huge mega projects, and they cost gigantic sums of money. And the completion of 610 is a good example. Here's a project that, when it first started out, was a rather modest project, and today to complete a small portion of that roadway costs $180 million. So we need to have prudent fiscal management, we need to have certainty of funding, and we need to have some type of increase in our funding system. I could go on, quite frankly, for hours about this. This has repeatedly been seen in our community as the most important issue, and quite frankly, this is by far the most frustrating issue I've ever had as a city council member, trying to explain to citizens why our roads are so clogged and why county roads are clogged because the interstate doesn't work and why city roads are being abused by so many cars because there was never an expectation that you would have tens and tens of thousands of cars on a city street on a daily basis because there's no room on the interstate, there's no room on the county roads, and so our roads are costing us tens of millions of dollars a year because of it. And with that, I would stand for questions.
Are there questions to the mayor?
I got you. I have a question for you. When I vote, and I voted for the transportation bill both times this year. This is my first term in the legislature. I campaigned on a transportation bill, and I feel very strongly about it. And I voted for the bill because, even though I felt that was a compromise already. So my question to you is, when you're asking for the governor and the legislature to do something. The bill we had, to me, is already a compromise. So do you want us to go further compromise to get something that the governor will sign off on? Or is it there a way that you think you can get the governor to understand how important and how far behind the state is?
Well, I assume that you as a body have tried to convince the governor. And I know that I have talked about this year after year. And I would hope that the governor would have a better understanding of the significance of some of these issues. But I also have to say that maybe I've actually reached the point that I would just as soon have a deal get made and have something get done versus us not getting things done year after year. I have to admit I've reached that frustration level. I don't know what you do, because every year it seems to me we end up in the exact same position at the end of the session with nothing being accomplished and fingers getting pointed. And I understand, you know, the legislature passed the bill this year, and I kind of frankly, you know, I haven't discussed with the governor why he vetoed it, and I don't know his answer, but I do think that we need to get something accomplished one way or another. And then maybe, quite frankly, this year maybe a veto override exists. I don't know.
My understanding was that he said it was too ambitious. Again, we are billions and billions of dollars behind, and this what our bill didn't even begin to make a dent. So that's why I asked you the question.
Well, I don't think your bill was too ambitious. But I also know that we have to move this forward in some manner, because if we don't, every year the costs increase so much. I mean, I have a road in my community in Highway 610 where if we could simply have made the final very small pieces of land acquisition, we could have saved tens of millions of dollars. And we have a project that at one point was going to cost $62 million for all of 610, the second phase of 610 from the river over to I-94. Today, just completing the small portion that's left costs $180 million. And so that's the problem that I think we face as a state, is that every year the costs are so dramatically higher that we need to start chipping away at this, or we'll never catch up.
Thank you.
Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor Stephenson, when you go door knocking in Maple Grove, you know, you're up for election, what, every 4 years?
Yes.
Talk to people in the Maple Grove communities at their door. What kind of response do you hear from those Maple Grove voters in regards to a gas tax increase?
My response from the people that I visit with is very clear. As long as I know that my gas tax dollars are going to the roads, I'm happy to pay the gas tax. That's what people tell me.
Thank you. Some people will say that Maple Grove has the most to benefit from a transportation bill that we would pass because of the completion of Highway 610. So the message from the Maple Grove voters, I encourage you to talk to your local legislators, because those could be the key votes that would make the difference in this bill.
I can tell you I've talked to them in the past.
Well, maybe you need to take them with you door to door.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Mayor Stephenson, when you those people ask you or tell you that they'd be willing to vote for a gas tax increase if they knew it went to roads and bridges, do you remind them that constitutionally that money is dedicated in the state of Minnesota to that? Because we still hear that from people that believe that we're using that money on the trains, that we're using it on the bus system, that we're using it on bike paths, and people that should know better, and they keep saying that, well, if it was dedicated for roads and bridges, but that's the way it is in the Constitution. So do you remind them of that?
I do remind them of that, and I think it's important for people to understand that that's what that money goes for. I think, you know, we in Maple Grove have a lot to benefit, as the rest of the state does, from completion of these projects. I bet even Chair Leader has a benefit if he could actually get through Maple Grove at night from St. Paul when he goes north to get home.
Trouble is, I don't waste much gas. I'm stopped most of the time.
You just stop and turn the car off because you're not going to go anywhere.
Thank you, Mayor. One question, not one question. You know, the question was, again, if we should take a portion of the governor's intention that he'd support something small. And we've been in the negotiating process, frankly, all summer, the Senate and the House members We've been negotiating, whether the public knows it or not, trying to resolve a transportation funding package. One of the problems we have, if we keep stepping down, as you pointed out, we're concerned in the legislature that if we even pass a 1 cent gas tax this year, say if we did that, we probably wouldn't pass another one for 10 years. That's been what's been going on with the legislature. As soon as we pass a cent, we're done for a while, and that's why we hate to yield just even a little bit.
Well, I understand that, but I also know that we've also had that discussion. I've been on the council in Maple Grove since 1996, and I think that pretty much every year there has been a similar discussion about the fact that we haven't come to an agreement. And I think that we do need to get past that at some point and move this forward in some fashion. And I don't know if it results in an indexing of the gas tax or if it what we do, but we can't continue in the mode of not increasing the amount of money we spend on roads and transit. We have to change that, and I don't know how you break that dynamic with the governor. I don't.
I represent more.
Well, Chair Leader, I would just like to say, you know, my other job, I teach negotiation, and we violated negotiation rule number one. We negotiated against ourselves in the Transportation Conference Committee. We lowered the gas tax from 10 cents to 5 cents. We eliminated the wheelage tax that we had proposed in the House in 80 of the 87 counties. We increased the bonding amount from $1.2 to $1.5 billion to come close to the governor's request. We did all of that in the absence of true negotiation.
That's correct. Yeah, Representative Morrow was on the conference committee with us, and that's, I guess that's the frustrations we have, and we're not picking on you. We're just trying to...
No, I understand, and I'm not thinking you are. I just think that we need to move this forward. And I'm expressing the frustration that I feel and that my community feels and the fact that we have a freeway system in Maple Grove that quite frankly doesn't function most of the day. I look out my office window in the morning and when I get there I'm thankful I don't have to travel on the freeways anymore because the 494 is dead stopped in Maple Grove. I-94 is dead stopped in Maple Grove. I mean, it's dead stopped all the way out to Rogers and up to St. Michael most mornings. And, you know, that is obviously not only expensive for businesses, but it's expensive for families. I mean, you think about the extra time that families have to take away from their family lives on a daily basis because of the travel. I mean, people who work downtown Minneapolis spend an extra hour a day in traffic and away from their families. And that's not, you know, that's not the way we should be running a community. That's not the way we should run the state.
Well, thank you, Mayor. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mayor. I was out finishing a conversation with the chamber and listening at the same time to what you're saying. And I have the same frustration, being the first term and being looking at the outside and before being in the legislature and just knowing that this should have gotten done a long time ago. And I hear your concern. We're here listening to you. We're here. This is the third of our field hearings, as I'm sure you've heard. I'm wondering if the governor has made his way out to the North Metro Mayors Association to talk specifically about the gas tax and to listen to your concerns directly.
We have had discussions with him directly about the gas tax and our concerns.
Okay. I think it's really important for all of us to be getting out and about, and the governor included, and I hope that he comes back here to this room and has this conversation with you all as well. And because to have this be a true compromise and a true dialogue, everyone at the table has to hear the same stories.
Yeah, and he's made the trek from St. Paul to Maple Grove and arrived late, too.
Thank you, Mayor. And we have no... I guess we're going to get some answers. We got the fiscal analyst, Mr. Swanson, up.
Ex-fiscal analyst.
Welcome to the committee.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Richard Swanson. I'm a council member for the City of Blaine, and I'm here tonight as president of the North Metro I-35W Coalition. We're a coalition composed of the cities of Arden Hills, Blaine, Circle Pines, Lexington, Mountview, New Brighton, plus Anoka and Ramsey counties. We have identified problems in the transportation network that must be addressed to balance the area mobility with needs for local access. but at virtually every turn, our search for solutions encounters funding barriers. For example, 694 is part of the Metro Area Beltway that has been designated as a high priority for expansion to at least six lanes. But reconstruction of 694 Snowing Avenue interchange has been delayed to after 2014 due to funding. Probably with the current events, it's been delayed to way after 2014. Reconstruction of the 694-35W interchange, one of the busiest in the metro area, is not scheduled until after the snowing project. These scheduled dates should and must accelerate to address current congestion. You've heard about Trunk Highway 10. Both 35W and Trunk Highway 10 are regional corridors that merge in Moundsview and Arden Hills, immediately next to the new Medtronic's campus. There's major pending redevelopment in the Twin City Army Ammunition Plant. New Brighton and Blaine have projects underway that will return contaminated land to the tax rolls, provide new homes and jobs, and create added economic vitality to the area. I won't go into the growth in the area. You got a little bit of it in Mr. Fisher's presentation on what's happening in Blaine, which is just part of the corridor. I'd like to point out, though, that the National Sports Center, a state agency which pays no transportation taxes, generates over 4 million visitors a year, and the majority of whom use 35W or Highway 65 to get there. In order for MnDOT and the affected communities to proceed with design and construction of individual interchanges needed to meet local access requirements and to mitigate already severe congestion problems, a plan for the ultimate reconstruction of 35W is needed so that all the subsequent pieces fit together. When I go to D.C. and talk about this project, I like to talk about 35W as a river. You've got Highway 10, you've got 65, you've got Radisson Road, you've got the northern Anoka counties, you've got Isanti, you've got Chisago counties feeding into it, you've got the 610 feeding into it, which is more important than just the Maple Groves. Our trucking industries need 610 to be able to avoid 694. All those roads feed into 35W. As those roads become more and more congested, as the flow grows, 35W becomes a river in flood. But what happens with a flood? One of two things. Either debris slows it down or it overflows its banks. So we either get more and more congestion, accidents, economic loss, or the traffic starts moving out into local roads, into the city roads, into Lexington Avenue, more into 65W going south. To date, we have been unable to secure from MnDOT even the relatively small amount of funds needed to do the design work necessary to answer questions about access choices. We have an earmarked request pending in the federal 08 appropriations process, thanks to Congresswoman Betty McCollum. Will MnDOT have matching funds, or are the cities and counties, and in some cases the private companies along the 35W, going to have to try and match that funding to get anything? And, you know, this is a major interstate state road. Experience shows that long-term system planning isn't very accurate in out years of current Metro and MnDOT plans. Just as LRT was not envisioned when the Washington Avenue Bridge was constructed, we must consider the future possibilities of transit options on the new 35W bridge and other significant structures that will serve our corridor for the next 100 years. All this growth feeding into 35W and into the new 35 bridge, we want to be sure that the new bridge in Minneapolis will be adequate to serve traffic traveling through our cities to and from the bridge. Consequently, we are concerned that the 4th Street and University Avenue interchange may serve as a major bottleneck for too many years due to lack of funds. We share concerns about problems facing people coming back to our communities from downtown Minneapolis, such as those at the Washington Avenue interchange ramps. Again, does MnDOT have the resources and flexibility to address these needs now? Apparently not without canceling major projects promised elsewhere. Rebuilding the bridge without an action plan to address access and egress issues at the ends of the bridge invites a host of problems. We want to be able to ensure our citizens and your constituents that the new bridge will have sufficient capacity for traffic and transit well beyond the 2030 forecast year that has been used in the design decision. We need funding for approach roadway investments now to minimize capacity and congestion problems when the new bridge opens. But again, MnDOT doesn't have the funds we need due to lack of agreement between legislature and governor on strategic planning. We have only touched the tip of the iceberg of transportation funding issues tonight. We urge you to consider all the ideas and needs being expressed during your field hearings, in newspaper stories and letters throughout the state, and under all the input you get. We urge you to act on this input and forge an agreement with the governor, and maybe as strong as you possibly can with the governor, that provides substantial new funding for roads and transit for Minnesota. Before we leave, I'd like to point out just one thing. The legislative leadership and Governor Ventura eliminated, for all practical purposes, the license cap. At the time that happened, that funding source was providing almost as much money into the highway user tax distribution fund as the gas tax. Think of where we would be today if that significant revenue flow hadn't been replaced, or if the legislative leaders and the governor at that time had substituted a funding source for that source, which they damned and didn't provide any other channels of funding for. Once again, I would like you to thank you for hosting this forum. Thank you for your time, and we stand ready to answer any questions.
Are there questions of Mr. Swanson? Representative Morrow.
Just for a brief observation again about the committee and the transportation bill. You're right. There are a number of people proposed to put together in terms of transportation funding. One thing that the vetoed bill did do was increase tab fees to address the very concern that you're mentioning.
It did to a small amount, yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Swanson. Appreciate it. Another question? Representative Gardner?
Just a quick follow-up. Councilman Swanson and I commiserate on this issue occasionally, as we both cover part of Blaine, but I checked with the Ramsey County Board about this issue on 694, because I'm about 100 yards away from there, and they're actually 694 is not scheduled to be widened at all. It's not even on the calendar anymore, and the Rice Street Bridge over 694 would have to come down to be able to fit three lanes in each direction, and that has been taken off the calendar. And I have the letter that says it was supposed to be done in 2004. And it's going to cost $23 million, and I predict that Ramsey County taxpayers are probably going to have to pick up the tab on that eventually to get moving.
Yeah. Your information is apparently a little more current than ours is.
Okay. Any further comment? No, thank you very much, Mr. Swanson. We have a couple, I think. Gloria Karski, North Branch Mayor, and Julie Dressel, City Mayor, North Branch. I guess you're going to work as a partners.
Tag team. We're a tag team. I need her technical expertise, and I'm the the politician. So, I'm Gloria Karski, City of North Branch Mayor. Thank you for the opportunity to address your committee chairman and the rest of the representatives and senators. Appreciate it. It's been needed for a long time, and it's good to know that you guys are listening to the local officials, because we have the day-to-day contact with people. We see them every day. We're out in the streets. We're driving those roads every day, and we can't avoid it. You know, we get elected on those types of issues, or not elected. What I wanted to do is just give you a little background. North Branch, for those of you who may not know where it's located, is about 40 miles north of the metropolitan area, Minneapolis and St. Paul, straight up 35 from here. We're located at the intersection of Interstate 35 and State Highway 95, and we have a project for a bridge expansion on the State Highway 95 extending east-west over Interstate 35W. This project has been in the works for 10 years. I've been a mayor for 5 years now, and we have identified this as our top number one priority for all the years that I've been in office, and I think before that, too, we have been working on this, like I say, for about 10 years. This is a regional problem. It is not just a city problem. We are a regional center for the area, and this intersection accommodates traffic standing both north-south, as you know, from the Twin Cities to points north to Duluth. I'm sure many of you have traveled that way, and you know how busy that road gets on Friday nights. And now it's that way Thursday nights, it's that way every night of the week, and it's that way going south on Sunday nights. That traffic backs up, but it's not as bad as the east-west traffic that backs up on the traffic going from Wisconsin, Taylor's Falls, heading to get onto the freeway, or extending to go westerly to Cambridge or points west of there. But we have had a major problem with safety, and I think that's my number one problem with this that I want to impress upon you, is that this is a safety issue. It's not just a cosmetic issue. It is an issue where the traffic actually backs up onto the freeway, and when you want to get off and exit onto the North Branch exit, I have found myself, you know, at a dead stop on the freeway, and that's very unsafe. Also, as far as the safety features go, the east-west traffic, the bridge is built in such a way right now, it's a two-lane route. There's no shoulder. There's no pedestrian walkway. There's no turn lanes. There's nothing. It's a dead stop there. It is not safe, and we see a lot of pedestrians on there. We see bikers. We see moms with strollers with babies on there. I have witnessed that myself, and I just go, you're taking your life into your hands, because it really is a safety issue for our community. That is the problem. The problem is we cannot get funding for this. I have traveled to Washington, D.C. twice. I have testified in front of the Transportation Committee at the state a couple of times as well, all trying to get this. And we've had some wonderful representatives and senators introducing bills to get us, to get funding for our project, but it's gone nowhere. What we were able to accomplish is through the attempts at the federal level is to secure funding on a federal level. However, we have not gotten anywhere on the state. I've identified the problem. Now, what's the solution? We need a bridge built. The bridge that we have proposed, and we've done the preliminary design work, and Julie can explain that a little bit further along the way. She's a city engineer. I won't get into the technical aspects because, frankly, that's not my area of expertise, and she does a much better job of that. As I've indicated, this is a regional-supported project. We have identified it as the number one transportation priority for the city. The county has also identified it as the number one transportation project, so same as the East Central Regional Development Commission. The North Branch Chamber, we have a city task force, we have community members, we have businesses, we are all working together to try and get this done. And we feel that 10 years is too long to wait for a project, and it's not going to get any better. I wouldn't bring this before you without offering a solution, however. I've identified the problem. And I don't like to identify problems without also offering a solution, because otherwise you're looking at a brick wall. And so I want to ask you, how many of you in your personal investments would invest money hoping to get 100% return? I mean, if you knew you were going to get 100% return, you'd do it. How about a 200% return? Yeah, okay, 300% return. If you knew you were going to get that, wouldn't you do it? What we have is a $22.2 million project. We have money already that's committed from the city, from the federal government, from the county, local funding. $22 million, all we're asking for is $6 million from the state. The rest of that we have already secured the funding for. That's going to be gone. If the state doesn't come forward and do something, we need your help, or that funding is going to go away. And I'm not advocating a particular method of funding this. I know that's a problem. I know you've got partisan interests, but you've got to get her done. You know, that's just it. Step up and leave aside the bickering and the trying to anticipate what might happen in the future. I think we're facing such a problem now. I just think, help us get it done. We've got an investment that I don't think can be afforded to, we can afford to leave lay on the table. We're going to lose an opportunity. Federal funding will go away and the project costs are going to increase, and it's only going to get worse. So with that, I'd like to introduce Julie Dressel, our city engineer, who will go over a little bit more on the design and the funding.
I'll make this very quick. Right now we've got a two-lane bridge with no pedestrian crossing. The proposed project started out as
just a way to get pedestrians across the bridge. It moved into dealing with some of the traffic congestion that we have. It takes people 20 minutes to go 1/2 mile about 5 days a week during all times of the year. The project itself will alleviate that. We've expanded the project. We've gone through MnDOT. We've got the municipal consent, MnDOT staff approved layout. Again, the project expansion has come from MnDOT's suggestions to make this project something we can do now and we don't need to go back to for long after all of you are retired from the legislature. So we've got a project. We're ready to go. We have the federal funding, county, local. We're going to need the state funding. We're in the 2014 work plan, and MnDOT has not been able to identify where that money will come from in that work plan. We're ready to advance construct, and we always say we took the show on the road begging for bridges, so here we are again.
Representative Morrow had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. We were down in Mankato, my neck of the woods, last night, and we got to talk about Highway 14, and Representative Kalin and I have a running joke. I always talk about Highway 14. He always talks about North Branch and this roadway. So I can tell you, I've learned a lot about North Branch. I didn't know about North Branch a year and a half ago, and I feel like I could identify the bridge. He's talked about the mothers with the strollers and the like. So he is doing a wonderful job of representing this issue. It's an interesting problem, though. What I learned from Chair Leader is we don't set the stip. We don't set what projects happen when. Rather, we try to let MnDOT make those decisions and the areas make those decisions. Because I know I'd like to get Highway 14 to the top of the list. North Mankato would like to get its interchange to the top of the list. And I'm sure this is another worthy project. You're right. It's a great return on investment. You're absolutely right. We need more money in the system in order for MnDOT to move projects up on all the stips throughout the area. This is a wonderfully needed project. You're absolutely right. But I think probably the solution is not moving one project up, but moving every project up by funding them more appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to make the same point because the council member from the city of Ramsey made an excellent point about the project in his area. And I'm glad that the legislature is not making a decision about whether to fund your project or his project. We give the money to MnDOT, and we let MnDOT make those decisions. If we were to do project-specific allocations, that would be called earmarking. And we hear at the federal level, nobody wants earmarks, right? We love when Congressman Oberstar brings money home to build Hiawatha. As long as we don't call it an earmark, then that's okay. I think that we don't want the state to move in that direction. And Chair Leader has been pretty strict about not hearing our specific road project bills, because otherwise I would be talking about 610 all day, every day, and asking for $150 million to get that done. But what I think people should talk about and understand is that the earmarks that we get from Washington are exactly these kind of projects that our congresspeople are bringing home from us. So, you know, the earmarks in the transportation area are a whole different deal than those hidden earmarks in other bills. They have hearings. There's public testimony. The representatives, the congresspeople's names are attached. So if Oberstar or Bachman brings something home, there, it's identified. It's not a secret process. But I just wanted to bring that point up because we hear this word earmark like it's a dirty word. And I don't think in the federal transportation funding process that earmarks are a bad thing. I'm really glad we have the chair of the House Transportation Committee as our congressman. But at the state level, I just think we would spend an inordinate amount of time reviewing projects when we really just need to be writing the check and trust that the engineers at MnDOT are making decisions based upon traffic count, fatalities, condition of the road. And I'm really concerned that, and we'll be, I'm sure, getting into this with the Bridge Committee and more Transportation Finance Committee hearings, of exactly how MnDOT is deciding which projects to put in which order. Because we might not have politics on this in the legislature because we're not doing this kind of earmarking, but we want to make sure that inside of MnDOT, your project has a fair shake against a project from any other part of the state. I just wanted to bring that up because we get this kind of request all the time, but we don't deal with that really at the legislature.
What I believe is really holding us back, excuse me, I didn't mean to.
No, I'm just going to call another member.
All right. If you go ahead, I wanted to offer a response, but I can do that after the next
member. Okay, Representative Kalin. No speeches, just would you ask the question?
You bet. I wanted to very briefly point out the lessons that
that I think apply across the board. The first is that rising tide lifts all boats, what the North Branch Bridge is a great example of a commitment from the federal level and projects, especially in these smaller regional centers that have grown so quickly that MnDOT is the last to come to the table, and that, I mean, we're talking about a $4.2 million commitment of property tax burden that's being made by Mayor Karski and the rest of the council, and Julie's been an incredible advocate for the project as well, but it's we know this across the board. The second is that Chisago County has the fastest growing fatality rate in the state. And it's actually even worse than County Road 14. And I'm the second biggest advocate for County Road 14 now, to Representative Morrow. I think that's a big piece of it. And the third lesson is one that actually I think is a caution for this group and for the legislature in general, that the federal money that we have been authorized has still not yet reached us for the North Branch Bridge, because we've been waiting on, is it the two-word correction?
The corrections bill, right? Definition, yes. Of the project, bridge versus the bridge with the approach and the signal.
Right. It's at most, it's a one-sentence correction that's been hung up for more than a year, and I believe you got the phone call, Mayor Karski, before, and sometime in winter 2005, was that
the,
right?
The House has passed the technical corrections bill. The Senate has sent it back to committee. We're waiting for the Senate to take action.
So just the point that we're talking about $195 million anticipated appropriation for the bridge that's affecting all these projects around the state. There is no guarantee when this money will ever show up in our hands. So I guess that's it. I appreciate, Mr. Chair, indulging Mayor Karski and Julie and Ms. Dressel. Done a phenomenal job, but I think it's a great example of how the funding situation is leaving a lot of communities behind and really shifting the burden again. So thank you.
If I could just comment and represent Hornstein's question, not question, comment, and I normally don't want to take the time, but again, to show that because we don't become involved in project selection, the project selections are set up at the local level first by basically we call it a STIP, but they have the RDCs, they have a transportation committee composed of mayors, county commissioners. They recommend, they have meetings all year, have a hearing. They then recommend to the district engineer. The district engineer construction or the highway construction districts most times has two RDCs in their district. So they will reprioritize, go through based on environmental right away and all those things. They then submit their priority to the central office. The central office has another group of engineers, staff, and all. They go through it, and they reprioritize based on the state level, and then that's submitted to the top executive, the commissioner and the deputies and the top four, basically. Then that's picked out of there. So for all practical purposes, it's relatively clean of politics, and I have to say that. We recognize that. And that's why we as a legislature can't get into it. We had a situation a number of years ago where all of a sudden every legislator put in a project before the Speaker of the House could cut it off. We had over $2 billion worth of project bills in. And so you can just see everybody's got a priority. You know, all of us have a priority, but they have to be ranked. And MnDOT does, in my opinion, still does a pretty good job. We can question them on many things, but we think they do, through the process, do a pretty good job of programming. Could not be correct. I think basically it's kind of accepted that way.
Well, we have a response to that, and I'll let Julie go first if I could.
If I can respond to that, we have gone through that process.
I know you do. I just commenting for...
Oh, for everybody else.
Because I think a lot of people get confused and think we don't do some of these things or why we don't do them. I just wanted to comment.
Yep.
President Hartman.
Mr. Chair, I think those of us, though, who represent portions of Anoka County would show you the map that... County Engineer Doug Fisher showed you about MnDOT's 20-year plans for Anoka County, one of the fastest-growing counties in the country. So there is some question about whether everybody's being treated fairly. I understand that you respect and understand their process inside and out, but I think the average person who lives in Anoka County has some question about whether the process at MnDOT is really free of internal politics.
But we would...
I can. What we would like to say is we have gone through that process, and we are in the MnDOT work plan for 2014. The $6 million that we're talking about is money that is the MnDOT cost share with the cost participation process, and the other entities, the other governmental entities, are coming to the table with their share. And the city did obtain $12.5 million through the federal process. Part of that is through the ATP process, Region 70. So we kind of feel like we've been following all the rules and we're there. We are going to need funding. You know, you all need funding for a lot of MnDOT projects. This is their cost share piece of it.
And I want to add, I respect the fact that you're not here to prioritize projects. You're here to hear the need. And we have a need, and add it to the bunch that you've already heard. But it's a it's a definite need. We need it.
Any comment? Further comments? Representative Nelson.
I just wanted to say I share your frustration. I've given this story before. When I first got elected, as a kid growing up in Brooklyn Center, the mayor at that time, he talked about in '66, MnDOT. They were promised to get Highway 100 created to a throughway with all the stoplights removed. And that was top priority. He became mayor of Brooklyn Center. He's long since retired. They finally finished that project in 2006. So that was 40 years. So, I mean, and that's the frustration that we all, and again, like Representative Hortman said, on the north side of the metro area, we all feel like, and that includes Anoka County, but we feel like we're getting shortchanged because a lot of bigger projects get done on the southern part of the metro area, and the northern metro area seems to get left behind. And the rural people can say the same thing. The outstate area, they complain about their projects. There's just not enough money in the system. We need to get more money into the system. We need to convince some individuals that we do need to increase the amount of money going into the Highway User Trust Fund by whatever means, and borrowing doesn't do it. That just helps the state projects. Does not help our local projects.
Lester, did you have further comments? I don't believe there are any further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Andrea, probably Parizan or Parisian? Andrea, is she still here? With the Transit for Livable Communities? How about Thomas Koblinski? He was also with the same group. How about Bill Blisi? The transit people probably left. Tim Scott? No?
The bus left. They had to catch the bus.
How about Barry Sauer? Is he still here?
Thank you. I'm glad those other ones didn't show up or stay around. I'm Gary Sauer, and I live in Maplewood. I'm the president of the Chiller Corporation. I've been fighting legislative battles for transportation funding since 1967. So the new members that are on the board can find out it's a very stressful and certainly a situation where we think we're never getting anywhere. But when I first said I wanted to come here and say something, and I have spoken before a lot of the bodies and stuff, I wanted to condemn some of the members who didn't. I was involved in co-chaired in the Vote Yes campaign that we finally got accomplished, and certain the other campaigns on the dollars that the bills that the legislative bodies were so kind to vote on and get passed and get overridden by the governor. In doing so, I thought, I'm not going to do that. That's not a very nice thing to do. So I sat down at my desk this afternoon and said, I'm going to put some numbers together because all the years that we're talking about, and I was involved in 1988 increase, which is about the same time that Wisconsin did it. And Wisconsin said, we're going to put a cost of living index on Wisconsin. And, of course, back then when I'm fighting the battles, it was, well, we're not going to be higher than the other states next to us. We're not going to do that. Well, who cares about them? We're worried about ourselves and the quality of life in Minnesota. So they can do what they have to do. Wisconsin did. They're up to 35 cents. And they've gradually done that over the last almost 20 years. And we're sitting where we are. Our cost is the same as theirs. Our oil prices are exactly the same as their oil prices. It's all the same. but they're even short over there. So I thought I'd go through some numbers. The average, I think they said 43 hours or 48 hours that were spent in congestion now. It continues to grow. Well, I just used 40 hours for this thing. And University of Texas does a study about every 3 or 4 years on congestion costs. And I think the average car, they said, cost $15 an hour in congestion. And that's the fuel that's wasted. That's the maintenance on the car, the wear and tear on the car. There's no hourly salary at all. It's just the vehicle. So I took the 40 hours times 15 bucks an hour to come up with $600. That's what it costs our people sitting in congestion, $600. The average person travels around 15,000 miles a year, and the average is somewhere around 15 miles per gallon. So the average person is buying about 1,000 gallons. Well, if I divide that out by the $600 cost, I could pay 60 cents more in gas tax and get home earlier and not have the cost and frustration and kick the dog and don't talk to the kids, come late to their soccer game and all those other frustrations that we all have. I'm not even talking about that. So then I got through with that, and of course we're working on, and we're going to help you. We're going to do some advertising out there in the next year that's going to try to educate the public, and that's really what we have to do. You talk to people about, you want a 5 cent gas tax? Well, no, I don't want to do that. But you say, you want to get home? You want to spend 5 cents, and then I'll give you 10 cents for it? I mean, that's what this is all about. So then I sat down and said, I wonder what my trucks are costing me on the highway. So I called up my trucking manager, and then I also called a friend of mine who's is a manager of one of the largest trucking companies in the country, and I was giving him my numbers. He said, yeah, that number's right. Yeah, that's right. Our trucks cost us $70 an hour. Now we've got a man that's getting labor costs, and we've got a larger vehicle and all the other stuff. And I said, in a 10-hour day, we must lose an hour in congestion. And my truck foreman said, 2 hours. I said, I'm going to only use 1 hour. I'm not going to use two. So I used 1 hour for that. And then I figured 200 days out of the year. So I know a lot of numbers needed. So 200 days a year, we lose an hour at $70 an hour. That cost me $14,000. $14,000. So every truck that you see out there in traffic is costing that company $14,000 a year, if that's a consistent thing. And not just, you know, what I'm talking about is this is a 10-hour day. So our truck is going well sometimes and sometimes not going well. So it's a whole day that they probably lose two, but I'm using one in my calculation. That same truck uses 6 gallons an hour times a 10-hour day is 60 gallons. Times 200 days is 12,000 gallons. That truck, I can pay state of Minnesota $1.17 more in fuel tax if I can get my truck rolling better. So think about that. What we're doing, we're talking about the 5 cents and the 10 cents, all this, cutting back to 7.5. We're all kidding ourselves. If we want a better way of life in the state of Minnesota, we're talking about a 30, 40, 50 cents. We can't be fooling around with a nickel dime. And we can't be fooling around with bonding. I remember talking to the governor's aide, and he was talking about bonding, and I said, so you want my children and grandchildren to pay for what I'm doing now? He says, well, they're going to last 40 years. Why shouldn't they? I said, see, that's the problem. We built all these things in the 1960s. They're already 40 years old. We're repairing the things that we built 40 years ago. So our kids are going to have to do that again in 40 years anyways. So I said, they can't pay for it. It should be a user's fee. It should be the gas tax user fee. If I'm going to jump in my car and drive somewhere, I've got a fee to do that. I can't expect my child or my grandchild to take care of that later on. You have to remember, I'm part of that, what do they call it? The Huh? The baby boomers? Just think of what our children and our grandchildren are going to pay for us baby boomers, who are going to be much more numbered than they are. They have to pay for our Social Security that might be kind of flat. They're going to pay for our Medicare. They're going to pay for all kinds of things. They don't need to pay for the transportation dollars now. And we have to understand that, and we have to do something about it. So don't talk about the 5 cents or 10 cents and negotiating those prices. We're talking about 40 and 50 cents, and we can afford it, because if you look at this, we're going to get it all back. It's not costing me anything. I'm going to pay that 40 cents, but I'm going to save 60 cents. That's great. I'll do that every day. But we have to remember that. And all these people that came in about projects that they have to do, we can start doing most of those projects. We don't have to get on a 20-day or a 20-year list or a 30-year list. We can get going on that stuff now, because it's going to take us 20 years to do all that stuff anyway. Okay? Let me see. I got some other notes in here. About the bonding, I already went through that bonding deal. I went to a conference. I thought a guy was going to talk about infrastructure and the need to get the infrastructure down. I went to it last week, and here he was, a lobbyist for tollways. Now, when those tollways come up, I'm going to tell you something. I just sat down with him. I said, they let me ask one quick question, and they took the mic from me. But I told him, I said, okay, your tollways, I did some calculation on that. If I'm paying 75 cents to go a 10-mile on your tollway, you know, that's I think it's a dollar. I wrote it down here somewhere. It was a dollar 12 and a half cents I just paid to use your tollway. And they talked about the tollways because they've got big corporations that have a lot of money that's going to build it for us. Those guys are going to do it for us. Are you kidding me? I mean, I get all done building them for you. I'm lucky if I can get 3 or 4 cents on the bottom line, 3 or 4%. These guys are going to put 15% on their bottom line. Just remember that. You want the local guys to do it, or you want the big business to do it? Okay? I think I'm probably done. Thank you very much.
Representative Nelson.
My only question is, can you put those figures that you had there, because I was trying to write them down, and my handwriting's not good enough to write them that fast. Could you send those to us,
send them to the
representative leader, and so we can get them to us, so that, because those are fascinating figures. And.
Yeah, they're real numbers, too. So.
I certainly
thank you very
appreciate
much for your time.
That. That was certainly thought-provoking. We've been trying to sell some of that just basically in what it would cost the average person for driving at 5 cent gas tax. And by the time it got through the legislature, we had the ex-speaker of the House saying it's going to cost them $500 or $600 a year for 5 cent gas tax.
Well, this is the thing. You know, I mean, as we're explaining things, and as I like the governor, he's smooth, but, you know, there's always a reason why not. There's always a reason why we should do it a different way, like, oh, but we've got hydrogen cars. Okay, that's fine. We'll figure out how to tax that 25 years from now when there's more of a reality. Just because it might be 1/100th of 1% now, it's not a tragedy for us if we don't tax it right away. We'll figure it out when it starts to do some damage for us.
Representative Hornstein had a question.
Thank you. Briefly, Mr. Chair, since I know that the hour's late here, but I'm very glad, Mr. Sauer, that you brought up your whole frame on this is tremendous, and I would recommend to the public and members of the committee, there was an editorial in the Star Tribune over the weekend, and they talked about this Texas A&M congestion study, and so the congestion tax is $790. I don't know if that was per person or per household. Per person. Okay. $790. And I think it's some of the factors that you mentioned. There's, I think, a lot that wasn't included. You know, the cost to clean air, for example, if we reach non-attainment in this region, it's another $300 million cost to business. And, you know, we can add a lot more. Representative Portman, we were talking about the Devil's Triangle project yesterday, and there's all kinds of costs related to insurance and issues when people get into accidents at these dangerous intersections. And, you know, that may not even be factored in. So this is a huge – that's what this is. We have to start talking about the congestion tax of $790 plus. And then I think, you know, our bill is maybe around $200. So, you know, Who's fooling who here? It's penny wise and pound foolish, not
to know. And that has nothing to do with the other frustrations, the psychological damage that's being done to families today. One other point I want to make.
So I'm just thanking you for your...
One other point I wanted to make was that highway study from MnDOT was $1 billion a year for 20 years. Okay, and I think it was $12 billion for the next 8 years or something, whatever that number is. You have to remember that was before the tragedy on August 1st. I don't think MnDOT have done a very good job. MnDOT does a wonderful job on our highways. Don't ever cut them short. But I think because of funding, you know, the dollar signs come up here. As you're evaluating, you can evaluate the way you'd really like to. So think of that. Maybe that billion is $1.1 billion or two or three or four. Because those bridges can suck up 1 year just like that before you know it, just like the $250 million to do the one they've got. Thank you.
Representative Hortman had a question. Mr. Starr.
Not necessarily a question for you. I appreciate very much your advocacy on this issue. I think that the people of Rushford, Minnesota, caused the governor to call a special session on the flooding. And I think that, you know, there was an op-ed in today's Star Tribune making a very good point that was a catastrophe, but this is also a catastrophe. And when you look at the bridge collapse and 13 lives, 7 people died in the flooding, we have over $200 million in costs related to that bridge collapse. We have $157 million in flood relief. I think that this is a pressing enough problem that the legislature showed when we come into session, we can be quick, we can be efficient, we'll make an agreement, we'll work bipartisanly, and we'll get out. And I think it's time for citizens like you, and I know you're already doing it, but for all of us to be asking for a special session on our transportation funding crisis, because it's just as bad as the flooding disaster. And we can do as quick a work on this as we did with that. But then, Mr. Chair, right before we leave, I know Connie Sahib-Jump stayed all night, and so we might as well take advantage of the fact that he's here. I know that MnDOT is requesting from the legislature authorization to spend or borrow $195 million, and I know that there's some concern about what projects will be delayed if that approval doesn't go through, and I just wanted to ask him on the record if he could get us a list of the projects or just a little bit of information from MnDOT on that, because as a Transportation Finance Committee, as a member of the Transportation Finance Committee, I have not seen any information on that request at all. And I think as a part of our job, we need to know what MnDOT's asking us for and what are the consequences of action and inaction.
No, the only thing about the special session, I was, Representative Weber was standing over there, and I almost had him that close to change his mind on the override. And I was so mad at him, I'm still going to probably fight him here, but... that's okay. I'm almost glad that he did what he did because it's bigger, you know, after that bridge thing, I realized myself in here that it's so much bigger. You can't compromise. And a special session, we're still looking at 10 cents or 5 cents or what. I mean, it's bigger than all that. Let's get down to the real bare facts. You're going to get a lot of information in all your different meetings and stuff. That's good. I told one of our employees the other day, I said, you know, we're spending this money on advertising trying to educate the public. I said, we still need to do that, but with some real hard numbers, the real numbers of what it really takes and the savings, like Representative talked about, said $780. Well, if you had to spend $300 or $400 to save that, why wouldn't you do that? I mean, but people don't know that. If you ask them in the street, they don't want to pay any more on anything. But if you say they're going to save because of it, I think they'll do that. But we need to educate them. Okay? That's really important. But then the second thing I thought is, before I'd spend $1 million to go on a new advertising campaign, I wonder if I should say, hey, contractors and businessmen, let's spend $1 million and have 4 or 5 real experts take a look at all the stuff you're getting in your hearings. And the information like I have here and what it really costs, let's come up with a real number. Let's not fight. Just like Bernie Leader said, you know, you can ask for one penny and then you won't get something for 10 years. I mean, let's get down to the real facts. We probably couldn't spend the 35 or 40 cents that it should be right away. So let's just go with 10 or 15, and then in 3 more years you have to go another 10 or 15 because this is what it tells you you have to do to get the job done. We have to get tough about it. I mean, it just has to be done right. We can't be fooling around with the nickel and dime anymore. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sauer. We, Representative Horton, if we could, we just have probably one more testifier, and I don't know if Connie, if he's still here. So we can talk to Connie after this testifier, probably. Mr. Matheson?
Wow. Thanks for sticking around, you guys. This is great. Thank you, Chairman Leader and members of the committee. I guess I'm preaching to the choir here based on what I've heard, and even to those of you who are Republicans, I think I may be preaching to the choir here, I hope, tonight. My name is Tom Matheson. I'm City Engineer and Public Works Director for the City of Crystal. Actually, I know Will Steger, and he's told me in private that he just wants to scream about what's been happening with global climate change. But he can't, because if he did, people don't listen to a screaming person. For many years, I've wanted to scream about transportation and transit funding, but for the same reason, I can't. For 6 years, I served on the Technical Advisory Committee to the Transportation Advisory Board at Met Council. Most of you are familiar with that organization. I was part of the team. So for 6 years, I was a part of the team that evaluated nearly all of the Minnesota transportation and transit projects that applied for federal funding. About 25% roughly over the 6 years I was involved, which ended actually 2 years ago, 25% of the projects were only partially funded. The rest went without. Every year, MnDOT staff would come and give the TAC a presentation on the ever-increasing dollars needed for maintenance and new construction and the increasing gap between the need and the available dollars. After the bridge failure, I talked to some of my long-time, 25-year friends at MnDOT. I said, isn't anyone going to say anything, not necessarily about the specific cause of the bridge, but about what's been happening? To my maybe a shock in some way, because I knew I'd want to speak up, they said, we don't want to lose our jobs. All the information is out there for the governor, the commissioner, and the legislators to see. Essentially, what's been happening behind the scenes is money has been moving around. When the commissioner got for the television set and talked about my daughter crosses that bridge every day, it would be hard to say, if you talk to the person in charge of maintenance dollars at MnDOT, if you could get them in a private room where they knew nothing would come back, and they really told you, as what I've heard, what really happens with that money when you're told to cut budgets. Now, I'm not saying there's any kind of conspiracy. This is nothing like that. This is a general scene, a general culture that has had to take place at MnDOT because of the cuts that have happened and this gap that's happened between where the money is and what the need is. This can't be continued to be a Republican Democrat kind of thing. Come on, you guys. I'm going to talk about attention span. Within a week and a half after the bridge came down, it seems to me one governor talked about a gas tax increase. I think I haven't heard anything much about it lately. This is 5 cents, 10 cents. The guy from Maplewood, I actually live in Maplewood, God rest your soul. We got a pretty fun council there and mayor, but that's another story. You got to admit, all of you, we're all adult, educated people. This is a comedy. This is a comedy for 10 cents or 15 cents. And you can't say, what do your citizens say? You know, I've had the benefit of working in Crystal for 13 years so far. We've had a great council. We have a great mayor, great elected officials. They make the tough decisions. You got to override the governor. Come on. what can I say? It's just crazy. I sit in my office, and I want to talk about local roads because people from North Ranch were here. Cities are at the bottom of the food chain. You all know that. Many of you came from cities, and we still are at the bottom of the food chain. Right now, we don't have levy limits, but we've suffered the brunt of levy limits. Crystal was built in the early 60s, post-war. Our streets are crumbling. In 1995, our council had the foresight to start a major street reconstruction program. It's going to last till the year 2017. 2017, that's 22 years of rebuilding local streets on a shoestring. For those of you who don't know how the gas tax money works, 9% of the state gas tax, which remember now, these are 1988 gas tax dollars. 1988. We all know what's happened to construction costs in the last, since 1988 even, right? I mean, they've gone through the roof. 9% comes to cities of over 5,000. The people with less than 5,000, they're kind of screwed. So that's a whole other topic you should deal with. But 5,000 and above, we scrap for that 9% of the state gas tax. And that only goes to 20% of our roads. So the other 80% of our local streets, we are on our own. And we are hurting. You know, city, as you know, cities are, you look everywhere, every city, the budgets have to go up. Property taxes have gone higher because it seems to me something happened with how the burden was put down and something to do with business industry and other stuff years ago. But the other thing that happens to our state gas tax, the 9%, it's only there to use in our local roads if we don't have a joint, a cooperative project with cooperative, I guess. They kind of have us by the, they have us. The county and the state projects come in. Right now, Crystal is facing the Botano Road, County Road 81 project. Hennepin County is looking to Crystal for $6.2 million. We don't have $6.2 million. We don't have it hidden anywhere. We don't have it buried anywhere. We're negotiating with that money. Now, what some cities would do is they would dig into their state aid money, but then that leaves, of course, your local state aid dollars for your local streets are unfunded. So in a nutshell, we're also looking for aid to the cities. We've tried to get the street utility through any number of years. Street utility was just an enabling legislation. It didn't say, thou shalt create a street utility. The storm drain utility, the streetlight utilities, which are great things that the legislature passed years ago, are wonderful things. The storm drain utility is helping many cities right now who have implemented it with all the NPDES, TMDL, all the water quality issues. If you can't give us a street utility, give us something. But please, I'm going to shut up here and take questions, but don't forget about the cities. Everybody is needing. I wish there were other people here from the other side, more so they could hear what's going on, but we just can't keep turning a blind eye. This is getting really, really critical. That's all I've got.
Thank you, Mr. Matheson. Other questions?
Thanks again
for your testimony. Appreciate it. We do have a Judy Rule. Rule, is she still in the audience? I believe she left. That would have been, unless there, Susie, you didn't have any other sign up, right? That would have been the last testifier. Representative Hortman, Connie is in the audience. Do you want, should we leave him for another? I think we've got him scheduled somewhere down the line, and just appreciate the fact that he's here. Connie's Sahej Bajam is the Metro District Engineer, for you that didn't know it, and he's under tremendous pressure, I think, trying to do stuff where you don't have money. We recognize that. And he'd probably be faced with some difficult decisions, as Representative Hortman pointed out, for the members of the audience that aren't aware of it. A decision has to be made if, I don't know how to put it, the Legislative Advisory Commission has to make a decision to authorize the Department of Transportation to sign the contract for the Certified W Bridge. And they... when you let a contract, whether it's a city, state, or county, or any governmental entity, before the governmental entity can sign the contract, you have to show that the money is there. And in this case, for the 35W bridge, as you know, at the federal level, it appears that some money is forthcoming. It's been authorized by the Senate, but not been appropriated. And the contract has been opened. It hasn't been awarded officially because it has to be signed. That's with the Flatiron Group for the 35W bridge. In order for that MnDOT to sign that, they're requesting through the Legislative Audit Commission that the Legislative Audit Commission sign off and say that there is a... that not as a possibility, but they're indicating that there would be $195 million coming from the Congress, the federal, basically Federal Highway Department of Congress. that money is not in hand, but nevertheless, MnDOT has to complete a or to sign the contract if it happens. And officially, that may not stop the bridge, but it certainly brings to light the situation MnDOT's in, that we don't have money. MnDOT's been in pretty tough straits. I think some of the testifiers indicated there have been some delays probably in project. It looks like there could be delays in project and shifting of monies. And unless, Connie, if you want to comment, I don't feel that we want to put you on a carpet here because I appreciate the fact that you came here to listen. But maybe you could clarify that for us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just called my wife. The kids are in bed, so don't have to worry about that. You were right, and this LAC request, what it'll do, and I believe the hearing is Monday, if I'm not mistaken, that will give us the spending authority from the legislature to spend the money that to build the bridge. As you know, the federal dollars are reimbursable, and they're sitting there in Washington being figured out with the rest of the transportation funding. Until so we have to spend the money first to get that money. And so once this budget authority is signed or approved, the spending authority, then we would have to come up with the dollars, and then and that'll prevent the it'll prevent the deferrals of all of other projects that we have in our 08 program. And as far as the list, you were asking about a list of projects that we're going to defer. There is no such thing. What you have, and you've had in your hand since August 15, when we had legislative hearings, a joint hearing, we gave you a list of only for the Metro District at that time, all of our projects in the 2008 fiscal year that could be affected. Because you asked what project could be affected. There's a long list. Today, we sent to you guys, and Eric Rudin is here, all the list of all the projects in the 08 for the department, Metro and outstate. It's not, you saw on the paper on Saturday, it's not just the Metro problems statewide. It's big enough to go statewide. So that's all you have as far as the list. We'll see how the LAC goes, and if that happens, then we can maybe go forward and not defer projects. And folks got latched onto the Wakota project yesterday, and that was this is a little disappointing to me, but you got to do what you got to do.
And there's a probability that the Legislative Audit Commission may not sign off. And I think that's why
right.
The probability is that may projects be deferred. And that, I guess that's a question that's raised.
Yes. And if they don't sign off, there will be deferrals.
And I appreciate your coming here and speaking.
Are there
some questions you wanted to ask, Connie? We certainly appreciate you coming here. And I don't envy your position. I think I've not been in that bad a position in my career, but
it's been exciting.
I think you'll handle it because I have confidence in you too.
I was trained by a great guy here, Pat Hughes, my former boss.
Beg your pardon?
Pat Hughes, my former boss. He was the Metro District Engineer before me. Except
that's right.
Except look the bridge fell down when I was.
Look what's happened to him. He's losing his hair, you know.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking forward to any future opportunities at your hearings.
Thank you very much, Connie. And with that, I guess I'd just like to comment. This is the third of our hearings. We'll have a number of other hearings throughout the state. And frankly, we've been hearing about basically the same message. It just appears that there's a dire need for transportation funding, and when we're talking transportation, you hear a lot about strictly the gas tax. But again, you have to consider we're talking total transportation because we can't do one without the other. We recognize that when the bridge is gone, 35 bridge went down, and certainly there was a need for transit. They did a lot of changes, and one of the things that legislature has not done in the past, we specifically oriented ourselves to addressing the highway needs. And that's where the problem arises with transit. Transit doesn't have a dedicated fund as the highways do. And right now, we've got the light rail, we've got commuter rail. Actually, that would not have been happened if it wouldn't have been for the regional rail authorities and the counties funding it, because the state didn't put much money or hardly any of it. 1 year, maybe 10, 15 years ago for the light rail, we were lucky we put in $50,000 to keep the RTB going. And the problem we have now, all of you are familiar that there are other corridors under consideration, Rush Line, Rock Line, or I forget what they all are. But as far as the legislature is concerned, we have not put any money into studies or anything in those, and we do know, that was pointed out even from the mayor of North Branch, that if there are federal monies available, you have to match them. And I think it's a failure of the legislature. We haven't done that. We put a little bit in its last bonding bill that was vetoed. We put some money in for some studies in those corridors. And that's why I say we need a total transportation picture or bill. We just can't go from day to day the way we've been going in the past, because we find out we're running our infrastructure in the ground. And again, for all of you that stayed that long, we certainly appreciate your attention. I see I have another county engineer here. Did you want to testify? You ran out of money, too. Mm-hmm. I don't. Again, we appreciate all your coming, and thank you for being here. The meeting is adjourned.